proud of it. What does that tell you about her? To a police force in this country that's actually cracking down on crime, particularly the scourge of e-bikes. West Midlands Police, LBC went on an operation.
Stop.
Okay.
Stand still, get off your bike for me now.
And the Chief Constable is here taking your calls later. Plus, at last...
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore.
Here's one for the ladies, a female Viagra is on the way. Details later in the hour. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Israel's security cabinet has voted to approve the military occupation of Gaza City. The escalation follows Benjamin Netanyahu's comments about taking control of the entire territory to remove Hamas. The UN says it risks catastrophic consequences for civilians and Israeli hostages. The Prime Minister spoke to Fox News ahead of the meeting.
We don't want to keep it. We want to have a security perimeter. We don't want to govern it. We don't want to be there as a governing body. We want to hand it over to Arab forces that will govern it properly without threatening us and giving Gazans a good life.
The United Arab Emirates has emerged as the possible venue for a meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Moscow suggested the talks on Ukraine could take place as soon as next week. Mr. Trump has confirmed he will go ahead with the trip, even if Mr. Putin refuses to meet the Ukrainian leader, Volodymyr Zelensky. The homelessness minister, Roshanara Ali, has resigned over a row about a rental property she owns in London. She reportedly hiked the rent on the house by £700 a month, weeks after the previous tenant's contract ended. Ms. Ali's insisted she followed all legal requirements. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clarke, says she was in a tricky position.
Labour are trying to push through this renters' rights bill, which is exactly going to ban landlords from trying to sell their property, from relisting it for higher rent less than 6 months after their tenants move out. So I think this was only a matter of time. I think this is obviously becoming a distraction, a row for the government. And Roshanara Ali, in her letter of resignation, has basically said as much.
People living near a newly built electricity pylons could get £250 a year off their energy bills. The government plans are intended to overcome local opposition to infrastructure like pylons and transmission cables. The upgrades are needed to reinforce the grid. Football fans are being urged to be vigilant about ticket scams in the run-up to the Premier League's opening fixtures. Lloyds Bank says its customers reported more than 2,400 cases of fraud over the past two seasons. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 9,100. Closed down 63 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather. Most of the UK dry with plenty of sunny spells. Some rain in northern Scotland. A high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Mom?
Dad?
We need to chat.
I think I'm old enough for a phone.
All my mates have one.
I want to be in the group chat.
But is it true when you post something...
It's kind of hard to take back.
Or strangers might message me.
That they're fake accounts.
Bots.
Toxic comments.
I want to know what's right and what's not.
So can we have the chat? You know,
the phone chat?
It can be hard to know what to do when it comes to kids and phones. Search EE Phone Chat from the UK's best network.
To verify best network, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven, Friday, August the 8th, the Israeli Security Cabinet approves an operation to take full military control of Gaza City. This despite loud protests. We played you a little part of those outside that meeting in Jerusalem. Once they've taken control, they will be given to friendly Arab forces. We'll look at that in more detail. Back here in the UK, a proud boast from leader of the Conservative Party, Kemah Badenoch, on that interview we were discussing with the BBC.
I must have been about 14 or 15. And I said, he's cheating. I stood up in the middle of the exam and I stood up and said, he's cheating, he's the one that's doing it. And that boy ended up getting expelled.
Is that something you'd be proud about? Maybe it's the school I went to, but to use what I think is an Australianism, we would never dob anyone in. Well, attempted murder, but we would never dob anybody in. Is that really something you'd boast about? End of a political career for another minister.
The homelessness minister has quit after it was revealed she evicted tenants from her property only to get more renters in and hike the rate. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with all the reaction.
How close might we be getting between some form of summit of President Trump, Vladimir Putin, Volodymyr Zelensky, Trump last night?
They would like to meet with me, and I'll do whatever I can to stop the killing. So last month, they lost 14,000 people killed. Last month.
And to the drug scene, no, legalized drug, announced super drug, even better than Wegovy or Mounjaro. It sheds even more weight. We'll be telling you about that. And one for the ladies. Female Viagra is on the way.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As I said right at the top of the show, the security cabinet in Israel approves an operation to take full military control of Gaza City. Now, this has happened overnight, well, overnight their time and overnight our time, because the meeting went into the early hours of this morning. The agreed a full security takeover of Gaza is required to end the war. We'll play you a little bit of a Fox News interview in just a moment. The idea being that once Hamas is disarmed, this is their belief, once Hamas is disarmed and the hostages are back, the area would then be given over to friendly Arab forces with Israeli security control. Much to unpick, as they say. Giving an interview to Bill Hemmer on the Fox News Network, Prime Minister of Israel Benjamin Netanyahu spoke of the plans to take full control.
Will Israel take control of all of Gaza?
We intend to, in order to assure our security, remove Hamas there, enable the population to be free of Gaza, and to pass it to civilian governance. That is not Hamas and not anyone advocating the destruction of Israel. That's what we want to do. We want to liberate ourselves and liberate the people of Gaza from the awful terror of Hamas. And you were in the Gaza Strip today. You met Palestinians who are fighting Hamas because finally they see that they have a future. They can rid themselves of this awful tyranny that not only holds our hostages, mm-hmm. but holds 2 million Palestinians in Gaza hostage. That's got to end.
Are you saying today that you will take control of the entire 26-mile Gaza Strip as it was 20 years ago to this month in 2005?
Well, we don't want to keep it. We want to have a security perimeter. We don't want to govern it. We don't want to be there as a governing body. We want to hand it over to Arab forces that will govern it properly, without threatening us and giving Gazans a good life. That's not possible with Hamas.
Giving Gazans a good life. Some of you might question that powerful interview there on Fox News. Meanwhile, as Prime Minister Netanyahu assembled his security cabinet to discuss those plans, which, as I said, were approved in the early hours of the morning, hostage families in Jerusalem had a different view. This comes, of course, amid what are reports of growing opposition within Israel by Israelis for this continued or indeed advanced military action. There are five principles to conclude the war. It's come out of that meeting early hours of this morning. I'll quickly run through the five of them. The demilitarization of Gaza, Israeli security control of Gaza, you heard, not electoral or running the place, disarmament of Hamas, the return of all hostages, the establishment of an alternative civil administration that would be neither Hamas or the Palestinian Authority. Let's speak with Dr. Shani Moore, who's Senior Research Fellow at the Britain-Israel Communications and Research Centre, a lecturer at Reichman University in Tel Aviv, and joins me now. Doctor, thank you for your time. How achievable are those five goals in your view? Good morning.
How achievable are those five goals all at once? It'll be very unlikely to achieve all of them. On the other hand, the way things were going now wasn't achieving it either. Israel was placed in something of a rather inhumane dilemma with its irreconcilable military goals here, both defeating Hamas and recovering the hostages, particularly the ones that are still alive. The thing that probably tilted the balance in favor of an expanded operation was the failure of the latest round of hostage talks. It seemed that the two sides had come very close to an agreement at the end of July. This agreement would have had a 60-day ceasefire, the release of 10 out of the 20 living hostages, along with a whole macabre calendar for the release of remains of those who were killed in captivity and a few other provisions. Those talks fell apart in the last week of July, and the Israelis and the Americans concluded, probably correctly, that Hamas isn't actually interested in ever releasing these hostages. If that conclusion's been made, then the thing that would argue against a broader military operation becomes less and less relevant. Back to your question, though, I don't think in particular the fifth goal, the one of a civil administration that is neither Hamas nor Palestinian Authority, is particularly realistic. Israel enters that situation in a situation where, if this operation even succeeds, it's a kind of you broke it, you bought it. But in order for Israel to be clear about what it wants in Gaza the day after, it has to come to some difficult truths that are difficult for certainly for the current governing coalition. And they prefer, like many countries in wartime, to be a bit ambiguous about the long-term goal about that.
You, earlier in the conversation, you used some rather chilling words. You don't think the hostages might ever be returned, Doctor?
I don't think Hamas is interested in releasing the hostages. I think that's pretty clear. I think that was particularly made clear in the last round of negotiations. I wrote an article about how Western interference actually doomed that negotiation, and I think that's true. The deal was about to be signed, as you might recall, on July 23rd. And then on July 21st, there was the foreign minister's statement, which basically placed a bunch of unilateral demands on Israel and awarded Hamas a whole bunch of undeserved prizes. At that point, they realized they could get what they wanted for free and didn't need to release hostages. If there were no hostages in this equation, the war would be, you know, a much more straightforward affair in the sense that we would expect the IDF to respond back to October 7th by occupying all of Gaza and dismantling Hamas completely. It's held back on doing that in the last 22 months precisely because of a fear of endangering the hostages and because Israel felt that in a staged process it could reach temporary ceasefires, liberate some of the hostages, as indeed it has done. There were 251 hostages initially. Today there are only 50 left, of which 20 are assumed to be alive.
Finally on this, you will obviously be aware British Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer within a month or so could recognise the Palestinian state. Certain conditions were applied to Israel, zero to Hamas. What influence might that have had?
I think that the foreign minister's statement, the recognition statements, and the massive PR campaign around the hunger crisis in Gaza gave Hamas the impression that it was getting everything it wanted without having to release a single hostage. The correct impression, by the way. I mean, the incentive structure that the international community has given Hamas from the first day of this war has been to incentivize a human sacrifice strategy as much as possible and to hold on to as many hostages for as long as possible. I think this has been disastrous for all sides in the conflict and disastrous for any kind of international norms. But for some reason, it's what so many self-appointed humanitarians believe. They don't want to do anything that could end the war. The war would end with the release of the hostages and a decommissioning of Hamas. And they don't want to do anything that would help the Gazan civilian population, particularly by helping them get out of there as long as the war is going on.
I will leave it there. Thanks for your time, Doctor. Dr. Shani Moore, excuse me, sir, your senior research fellow at the Britain-Israel Communications and Research Centre. You are joining us from Tel Aviv. Listening, Gershon Baskin, who's Middle East Director for the International Communities Organisation, has worked as a peace negotiator and involved in negotiations with Hamas. And maybe that can form the basis of my first question. This has only really broken in the early hours of this morning. What do you imagine the reaction might be among senior members of the Hamas organisation? Good morning.
Good morning. There are so many things wrong with the Israeli plan and so many things that, if they're done, are going to endanger the lives of the hostages, of Israeli soldiers, and of thousands, maybe tens of thousands of more Palestinians. This is something that must not happen, and the international community must prevent it. We're getting really serious here. There are 2 million people crammed into a small corner of Gaza, and Israel intends to go into areas where they've been reluctant to go in until now because they believe this is the areas where the hostages are being held. Hamas leaders and people holding hostages, even hostages themselves who come back, have said that they have been told by their captors that they are obligated by Islam to protect them. But if the Israelis are on their tails, they are obligated to execute them. We saw that happening a year ago when six young hostages were executed.
I have to challenge you there, Mr. Baskin. You'll have seen a video released by Hamas of, it would appear, one hostage, it would appear, being forced to dig his own grave.
Yeah, this was drama for putting pressure on Israeli society. No, the hostages are dying. There's no question about it.
Those hostages are kept in tunnels. How does that fit in with the tenet of Islam to look after them?
Well, they're breaking the tenet of Islam. It was also against Islam to capture women and children and elderly and sick and wounded.
Okay.
I'm just saying that the hostages' lives are already in danger. They are starving to death. Should the Israelis attack where they are being held, they will be executed by Hamas. There shouldn't be any questions about this. Now, it not only endangers the hostages.
How is peace to be brokered then, Mr. Baskin?
Well, we're not talking about peace. We're talking about an end to the war. There's a big difference between the two. Hamas, as opposed to what your former guest said, is fully prepared to release all the hostages, all 50 hostages, those living and those dead. But their bottom line condition is that it brings an end to the war and Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. This is their bottom line conditions. This has been their conditions for over a year now, even when the talks were going on.
But Israel is never going to accede to that, is it, sadly, Mr. Baskin?
Well, it will if President Trump tells them to do it. This is the key that needs to be turned in order to get Israel to do it. And Trump says that he wants to end the wars, that he wants to end the Gaza war. He's committed to providing food and medical aid for Gaza. He also this week gave a green light to Israel to continue its military operation. That's apparently from the belief that Hamas is not ready to make a deal. My talks with Hamas, even in the most recent days, indicate a clear willingness to make a deal to end the war. And I'm not advocating Hamas here. I'm just telling you what the messages that I've been told to give to the Israeli side, to give to the Americans, is that they are prepared to release all the hostages
if the IDF pulls out, right?
That's a condition that and it can be coordinated withdrawal. They're willing for other military presence to be in Gaza.
And I must leave it there, Mr. I'd like more time, but I'm afraid we have to lift a news bulletin, sir. Gershon Baskin, thank you. I hope we speak again. You're Middle East Director of the International Communities Organization. You have served as a peace negotiator speaking with Hamas. Benjamin Netanyahu, unstoppable, even with the protests from the hostage families. Should he actually listen to those, or does he have to, as some of his cabinet agreed, take full control of the area? Plus, from homelessness minister to jobless minister.
The end of a private tenancy is a leading cause of homelessness. I speak to people week in, week out, who have to leave a privately rented home and cannot find anything else they can afford.
Yeah, farewell to the homelessness minister who has resigned. That's Vicky Spratt, who is housing correspondent of the newspaper, who broke the initial story. More on that later. A little late to the 7:15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Israel's security cabinet has approved Benjamin Netanyahu's plan to take over Gaza City. The White House says it's still working on the details of any potential summit between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. And Rishanara Ali has resigned as the homelessness minister over a row about a rental property in East London. LBC weather, most of the UK dry with sunny spells, some rain in northern Scotland, a high 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M25 clockwise at the Cleckett Lane services. A van's broken down and one lane is closed for recovery. The A12 remains closed northbound between junctions 19 at the Boreham interchange and 20A at Hatfield Peveril South, and that's because of a serious accident. In Tottenham, the A10 High Road remains closed in both directions at the Seven Sisters Road, and that's all down to an accident. On the trains, Thameslink services are severely disrupted because these overhead wire problems at Radlett, but also no service between South Croydon and East Grinstead, and also between London Bridge and Dartford, and no Northern Line services running between Camden Town and Edgware.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was a dream that became a nightmare. High pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many customers feeling misled, angry, and trapped. But the Holiday Park Advice Centre can help. Contact us today and we'll help claim back any money you're owed on your holiday home. Text ASSIST to 78900 to get started.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Ever won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
I'm Dr. Andrew Darwood from the Darwood and Tanner Dental Practice. For over 30 years now, with co-founder Dr. Susan Tanner, we've assembled a dedicated and caring, multidisciplinary team of dental experts who are at the forefront of their field, all with just one purpose in mind, creating the most comprehensive, tailored and complete dental implant treatments to keep you smiling.
For more on dental implants and our full range of treatments, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's reality, isn't it? This is the truth of the matter. 20 minutes after 7, that meeting that went into the early hours of this morning as the Israeli Security Cabinet approves Benjamin Netanyahu's drive to take full control of Gaza. Those five principles, I just remind you, disarmament of Hamas, return of all hostages, demilitarization of Gaza, Israeli security control of Gaza, and the establishment of a civil administration which would be neither Hamas nor the Palestinian Authority. Realistically, how is that going to be? Now, just to give you a bit of background here, Israel already controls around 75% of Gaza, and the borders are effectively sealed. And the areas that they haven't taken, two key areas, is where they believe the hostages are. The hostages are still alive, so that it is reported that that obviously precludes them from shelling those areas. We'll come to your calls on that in just a moment. John, you're the first caller. Now, this broke overnight, so it was too late for the newspapers to put it on its front pages. I'll just quickly give you some of the other stories that are on the front pages that we will be looking at later in this hour. The Daily Mail follows up. Let's give the Eye credit. The Eye broke this story. UK's Minister for Homelessness quits. Yes, the Homelessness Minister has become the Jobless Minister. The Daily Mail splashes or leads with that story. Health for the front pages of both the Daily Mirror and the Daily Express. Pill for weight loss on the NHS is the Express. Same sort of thing for the Mirror. Weight loss pill on the NHS. Lastly, let's give you the old current bun at the Sun. Asylum Seasiders. This is fury in Bournemouth, where holidaymakers say they're paying thousands of pounds to stay in a range or a series of hotels, some of which now are where migrants are put up for free just 200 metres from the seafront. And the Sun newspaper has a series of powerful pictures in there that shows some of those people. So go to the LBC app for the latest on the Israel story that we're discussing. Israel Security Cabinet approves plan to take full control. And we'll take one other one at random. And this is Mail Online, which is, sadly, you may recall we did the story of the woman who went missing on the beach in Greece. Well, the Mail Online have now spoken with her husband. Obviously, there's still been no discovery, and I think we have to take a rather sad view of what's happened there. I woke up and she wasn't there, says the husband, who also claimed how police initially did not help him and indeed even laughed at some of his suggestions. You'll find that story more on that. OK, John in Seaford. How attainable are those five goals? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Well, some might be and some might not, but I was just listening to the expert from Israel and then your other
former peace negotiator.
That's right. And I was just thinking to myself historically, would the Allies in the Second World War, would we had unconditional surrender for both the Germans and the Japanese, would we have allowed Hitler and the Nazis to stay in power and do things, or the Japanese? No, we wouldn't, and we didn't. Why do people expect that Israel should allow their enemy Hamas, who wished to destroy Israel and destroy all dues that they can. Why would we expect them to allow them to
Although Hamas is in political and an administrative control of the Palestinian area, it's not actually effectively... Well, it's not a state, and that's another point of negotiation.
Of course it isn't.
And so that's why the analogy, I think, between the United Kingdom or the Allies and Germany and Japan, I don't think it quite holds in reality.
Well, it does if you want to destroy the enemy that wants to destroy you, Nick, doesn't it? I mean, the Hamas organization controlled out of that area by Iran, they want to destroy Israel and wipe out all the Jews.
In all the tactics that were deployed in the Second World War, and some very brave men, and I'm sure women, took some very brave decisions, the idea, as reported, that in some instances there's denial of water, medical supplies and food was not one of them.
No, but then we weren't supplying those to the Germans, were we, in the Second World War, or to the Japanese?
If you allow the most important thing... the most important thing is peace, but the initial step to getting to peace is the return of the 20 hostages who are believed to still be alive. This sort of action by Israel, how likely is that to bring it about? Is it more likely or less likely?
I don't think it's likely to bring them back, and I don't think they're going to come back alive anyway.
That's a pretty gloomy thought. John, thank you. We'll take more calls on that. David, you'll be the next caller. But we try and give you as many stories as we can through the course of the morning to set you up for the day. Or if you finish your shift, to let you go to bed, at least know what's going on in the world. And we go elsewhere. Donald Trump last night dismissing the idea that a US-Russia summit will only happen if Vladimir Putin meets the Ukrainian president. Here's a little from President Trump in the White House last night.
They would like to meet with me, and I'll do whatever I can to stop the killing. So... last month, they lost 14,000 people killed. Last month, every week is 4,000 or 5,000 people. So I don't like long waits. I think it's a shame.
Let's turn to Colonel Simon Diggins, who's a defence analyst, served as colonel in the British Army and as UK defence attaché to Afghanistan, and joins me now. Colonel, I've no idea, sir, whether you're a betting man or not, but what odds would you give of a two-way or even a three-part summit? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think that the chances of a summit are probably evens at best. That's for the two-way meet. For a three-way meet, I think that's unlikely at the moment. There is no sign that Putin has changed any of his demands, his territorial demands, and his demands for what he calls a denazification of Ukraine from before. And therefore, they are unacceptable to President Zelensky and to the Ukrainians. And therefore, I cannot see an opportunity for them to meet. But I think Putin and Trump meeting, I think there is a chance of that.
The man of this time yesterday, Colonel, Sir Ben Wallace, a man you will know or possibly know well, was sensing that there was a need possibly for Putin to come to a sense of reality. Apparently recruitment is very hard for the Russian army. I think Sir Ben used the expression like 1,000 men are going through the mincer each day. Do you pick up on that as well, Colonel?
Sir Ben has probably got better information than me. I think my reading is slightly different. I think they are under pressure. They're financially under pressure for the first time since the war began. They've got basically a war economy running at the moment, and it means you have an efficient war machine, but the rest of the country and economy doesn't work so well. But they can probably maintain a significant level of pressure on Ukraine, probably at least until 2027. So they've got two more years of it. I won't say it's comfortable. I won't say it's easy. But I don't think it's necessarily sufficient for them to turn the fighting off.
Lastly, Sir Ben also said that any form of summit that goes on, there should be at least a European power, preferably the United Kingdom or France or one of those. Your reaction to that, Colonel?
I think unlikely. I mean, what leverage have we got, frankly? I think one of the difficulties we've demonstrated rather effectively over the last few months is that we have little or no leverage, little or no influence over what's going on. We might want to be involved. We might want to be to say we're part of the whole thing, but what are we bringing to the party that is different from the pressure that's coming from there? I think the Ukrainians would like us if it was a three-way summit, but I think a two-way summit between Trump and Putin would be regarded, sadly, and it really is sadly, as an irrelevance.
Thanks for your time this morning, Colonel. Simon Diggins, the defence analyst, Colonel in the British Army, served as UK defence attaché to Afghanistan. You might have views on that, but at 7:28 it is. Events overnight within the last few hours, actually, as Israel drives on with occupation of Gaza. David in South Woodford, your reaction to the decision taken earlier? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I think it's going to be a disaster for Israel and for Gaza. I mean, back in 2010, David Cameron
called Gaza an open-air prison.
Oh, he did. I'd forgotten that. Yeah.
And so all these people will say, you know, Israel hasn't been imprisoning the Palestinians or the Gaza residents. It's nonsense. But yesterday, I think it was yesterday, a couple of days ago, Haaretz and Channel 12 in Israel confirmed that the actual IDF losses are about five times more and casualties 10 times more than the Israelis have reported. Mm. And that was then admitted, then that was admitted by the new chief for the IDF. Mm. So it's going to be a disaster for Israel as well, for loss of life.
Lastly, how precarious do you think, and it's very difficult for us to say, we're thousands of miles away, but you're right, we know the hostage families are opposed to this. There are reports that people are now not joining up with the IDF. Some youngsters are refusing to be called up as reserves. Do you sense he's losing a lot of domestic support, David?
He's losing domestic support, but the support he has in his cabinet, they want, it's all part of Project Greater Israel. There's going to be annexation. They don't want any Palestinian state.
David, thank you for your view. Coming up later in the show, Kemi Badenoch, in that interview, we were discussing the religious aspect yesterday, the interview that went out on the BBC. There's another one where she seems to proudly boast how she got a fellow pupil expelled from school. She called him out for cheating. Don't know the school you went to, but we would never, ever dob a pupil in. And if you had got someone expelled, would you proclaim it? Would you be proud? Plus, from homelessness to jobless, we'll have more on the minister who's been forced to quit, be in no doubt. And also later in the hour.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend.
To say they're raw, but Viagra is on the way for the latest. 7:30, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
Israel's security cabinet has approved plans for a full military occupation of Gaza City. The UN has warned it could lead to catastrophic consequences for Palestinian civilians and Israeli hostages. The UAE has emerged as the possible venue for a meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Moscow suggested the talks on Ukraine could take place as soon as next week. Rishanara Ali has resigned as homelessness minister over a row about a rental property. She reportedly upped the rent on a house in East London just weeks after the previous tenant's contract ended. LBC weather. Most of the UK dry with plenty of sunny spells. Some rain in the north of Scotland. A high of 26 degrees.
LBC.
Warmer. Colder.
Colder.
Warmer. Warmer. Really warm. Finding a deal on a new fridge freezer isn't always easy. But at Currys, you'll find loads of deals on loads of top brands. So don't be a melt. Find a cool deal on a fridge freezer this week. Online or at your local Currys in Guildford.
Join us for the Mercedes-Benz Platinum Star event. From the 8th to the 18th of August, enjoy exclusive in-store savings when you order your new Mercedes-Benz and step into a world of refined luxury. From the all-electric EQS with intuitive MBUX hyperscreen to the GLE SUV's comfort-enhancing massaging seats, this is excellence redefined. Appointments are limited. Book yours today at your local showroom. T's and C's apply. Selected models subject to availability.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is, and you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:33 exactly. Set your clock, your watch, check your mobile phone. John, you'll be the next. Oh, that's interesting. You'll have a perspective from outside of the United Kingdom. Look forward to speaking with you in a moment or two about this decision in the early hours of the morning. But we always dive into the world of finance around this time. Let's welcome Anna McDonald, who's investment manager at Aubrey Capital Management, stepping up to the plate to give us the latest. And can I take you to the front page of today's Financial Times, the Bank of England decision. How are city men and women reacting to it 24 hours on? Morning, Anna.
Good morning. Good morning, Nick. Well, the Bank of England did cut rates by 0.25%. No surprise there. But what did catch the market off guard was how split the decision was. And they actually had to have two votes to get this through and decide on that 0.25% cut. And what's the what's troubling the members? Well, you've got two balancing things. You've got, on the one hand, a pretty sluggish economy, and on the other, you've got stubborn inflation. And that's the main remit of the Bank of England. It's to keep inflation at a better level of 2%, but that's just not behaving in the UK. It's not behaving like it is in the US and Europe, because inflation's going to hit 4% in September, they think, and that's because of high labour costs from April's minimum wage and national insurance changes, plus rising food prices. And remember, our energy prices are the highest in Europe.
So I look at this, you're a city expert, I'm not, I'm just a journalist. It would seem to be, I mean, I've got children, right, who are trying to buy houses. Yeah. I've got a lot of listeners who are trying to buy houses or have got mortgages. So, hey, this is great. But there's obviously, as with most things in life, there's another side to the coin.
Yes, and the markets, you're right, a quarter point, 0.25% cut is nice, but we were expecting at least one more by the end of the year, and the chance of that seemed to be a little bit more limited. So the Bank of England saying we need to see what happens to inflation before we can make another cut. And that's just put the brakes, I think, on a bit. And the market, the way the market prices the interest rate environment is through the bond market, and actually bond yields went up a little bit yesterday. You'd normally have expected them to go down.
Okay, no conversation on any level, perhaps aside from football, is complete without talking about President Trump. Now, he's demanded a Chinese takeaway from a particular company. Which is it and why?
It's Intel and their new CEO, or relatively new CEO, Lip-Bu Tan. And even by Trump's normal standards, asking a CEO to resign is quite something. And I think most industry watchers think this is more about pressure from Trump on him, saying, come on, I want some more investment in the US. I don't want you talking about doing any hookups with TSMC. And, you know, Trump just loves that leverage, doesn't he? He wants the CEOs to come and kiss the ring. And we've seen that with Apple getting a big carve out yesterday, saying, no, you don't need to pay 100% tariffs on semiconductor chips because you've promised to invest $100 billion.
Finally, more advance for ChatGPT. Where's that going now?
They say the new model, which is ChatGPT-5, is going to be like talking to a PhD level expert. I don't know who wants to do that every day, but anyway.
That's me.
And they say that it's going to be, it's just another development. It's going to have lots of great reasoning and capabilities. I would say that the proof will be in the pudding. Yeah. I mean, it can be quite helpful, but a lot of people worry it stifles creativity, it hallucinates things, and it just makes us a bit lazy.
Enjoy your weekend. Have a lazy time if you're allowed one. Anna McDonald is investment manager at Aubrey Capital Management. Anna, thanks for your time. 7:36. We're off to Paris, France. John, your reaction to what you're hearing from Israel in the early hours of this morning. Morning, sir.
So, morning. I just had a chuckle when that bloke called on and said he wanted to compare the Allies and Brits during the Second World War.
I don't
Israel.
Hold with that analogy, but he's perfectly entitled to say it.
So, you know, without going out around history and the injustices of, you know, against the Palestinians, what I don't understand is why because there's no hostages in the West Bank. So why don't the Israelis show the Palestinians what they could have, you know, help them create a functioning state? And say, okay, let's live in peace. This is what you can have.
But isn't the problem here Hamas, John?
Hamas is not in the West Bank.
No. But you say to show the Palestinians how they can do it. For that to happen, I assume you mean Gaza as well. Do you just mean the West Bank?
No, let's separate it, right? So there's no hostages in the West Bank.
Right.
Now, if you want people to stop attacking you and to stop hating you, why don't a functioning state like Israel, who's powerful, has a lot of money, a lot of funds, but also a lot of, you know, has been able to create a functioning state over the last 8 years. Why doesn't it work with the international community and say, okay, let's help create a functioning state in the occupied West Bank, and then we can show the rest of the world, the Arabs, the Palestinians, this is what we can help you create. If you put down your weapon.
You're assuming that the Palestinian control of the West Bank would want that to take place, John. How confident are you that that is the case?
Okay, so right now, the taxes, so by international law, Israel collects the taxes in the West Bank.
Yeah.
Now, those taxes are still in the hands of the Israelis. Despite Mohammed Abbas, he is like a sleeping dog. he doesn't do anything, right? Right. And yet those taxes, he hasn't attacked Israel. He hasn't said any bad words against Israel. He hasn't sent any of his fighters or if he has any against Israel.
But all right, okay. John, I have to move on because I want to get involved in others. And thank you. Good to hear from your view from Paris. And look, on face value, what you suggest makes sense, but I think what we both sadly have to accept is that the division goes down centuries. It's a historical division between these two people. So while you and I can talk about cooperation, there are so, and I'm not saying you're not wrong with that idea, but there are so many hurdles to cross which go back just centuries. John, thank you. A bit of email and social media on this. This comes in from Tom in Tooting. Your caller misrepresents the situation in Gaza. Hamas has offered to return all the hostages in return for a permanent end to Israel's attacks on Gaza. Israel insists on resuming the fighting after the return of the hostages and the ceasefire. Well, all I would say, Tom, is that would then you'd expect Israel to allow Hamas to continue to run Palestine when their avowed intent is to wipe every Jew off the face of the earth. So it's whether they'd agree with that. One last one. Anthony in Leeds. I believe it's obvious the Israeli government aren't interested in getting the hostages back. If they were, they'd have agreed to the Hamas offer. They withdraw from Gaza, get them back, and then go in and take control. All right, we'll come back to your reactions on that in a moment. It's 7:40. Let's come back to domestic affairs, and let's give praise. Journalists doing what journalists are put on earth to do, which is finding out stories people don't want them to know. So credit to Vicky Spratt of the I newspaper for revealing the former homelessness minister who now has become the jobless former homelessness minister. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has all the details. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, so Roshanara Ali resigned quite late last night as homelessness minister, Downing Street has told us, and it comes after, you say, that report in the I newspaper. She was accused of hypocrisy over the way that she had handled the rent increases on one of the properties that she owns in East London. Now, she had been facing, I think it's fair to say, Nick, quite an onslaught of criticism over this story. Basically, what happened was she was renting this property out for a certain amount a month. That contract did come to an end. Her tenants were told that they had to leave or could go onto a rolling contract. They were turfed out of the flat, according to the I newspaper. Just a few months later, it was then put on the market.
Told it was going to be for sale, weren't they?
They were told it was going to be for sale, which understandably, if your landlord is deciding to sell their property, of course, that's a reason that you do need to move out. Just a few months later, that same property was put on for several hundreds of pounds a month extra a month. So there have been questions here about whether she was basically trying to get more money out of her tenants. And in a letter to the Prime Minister yesterday, she said that all times I have followed the legal requirements. But the problem is, Nick, the government are trying to change those legal requirements to try to give extra protections to renters so that landlords cannot do exactly this. They will be banned from doing so under the Renters' Rights Bill, which is going through Parliament at the moment. It's going through ping-pong stages, so it's going back between the Commons and the Lords. But yes, this is exactly the kind of thing that the government wants to say to tenants that they should not be able to do. Here's Angela Rayner telling ITV earlier this year about why she believes that more protections for renters are needed.
Section 21 no-fault evictions is not a way to address issues that landlords may have with some tenants, so we set that out more clearly about the expectations there, but also about making sure that tenants are more secure in their tenancy as well, so that because it is their home and that they do need protections. And this bidding war that we've seen in the past where tenants are pitted against each other to try and increase their rents above market rates, we'll be preventing that from happening and giving tenants more clarity and more rights as part of their tenancy agreement, and providing clarity for the landlords as well who rent out their properties.
So I think, Nick, this was really only going to be a matter of time. It's been totally seized on by the opposition. The Conservatives say that Labour promised a government of integrity and are delivering one of self-service and hypocrisy. The Liberal Democrats say she's meant to be reducing homelessness, not increasing it. So this is going to be something which I think many people will agree, not a good look for the Labour Party. Lots of Labour MPs yesterday were privately very uncomfortable of it. Of course, moderately quick action has been taken on this case, but I think it risks for many voters just looking at this after years of Tory sleaze scandals and just looking at MPs are going, are they all the same?
Well, we'll ask you about the damage to Sakir in a moment. The I newspaper, I refer to them again, they have a timeline to the resignation. The story gets broken. Defence is offered by some fellow ministers. The Conservatives, as you rightly referenced, Natasha, say she has to go, blah, blah, blah. But just after lunch, Shelter the organisation says, it beggars belief. That's presumably, you'll have seen a lot of resignations, you've seen ministers come and go. Obviously, Labour are going to cry foul with the Tories, Conservatives, we get all of that. But when charities start getting involved, is that when the Prime Minister's advisers are going to say, Sir Keir, we've got a problem with this one?
I think that's fair. And obviously, you look at the resignation letter where she said, you know, I'm becoming a distraction. And actually, you know what, Nick, I hate it when politicians use that. I just say that you've admitted that you've done something wrong here and that it does look bad and it smells bad. And it's not really about whether you followed the letter of the law or not. It's about the spirit in which this Labour government are trying to govern. They said repeatedly, we're going to be better than the Tories, we're going to be better than the last guys. And now they need to really prove it. And in this case, it just hasn't happened, has it?
Much damage to Sir Keir?
I think it will be a bit, but equally, like I say, he's dealt with it fairly swiftly. He's you know, moved her on. I don't think she'll be coming back to the front benches anytime soon. But yes, I think probably it's August. It's a little bit of a quieter season. Many people won't have seen it. MPs are all off on holiday. Like I say, there was a little bit of disquiet about it yesterday amongst MPs, but I think that grumbling will probably go away quite soon.
Yeah, I think you and I could be thankful we're not in the home of the former homelessness minister last night or today. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, reporting. Calls coming in on this. Huss is in Grove Park. Huss, what do you have to say? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Nick, at the end of the day, if she was going to empty the property to sell it, and then she decided to go back to market on the property, I don't think there's a problem putting it back at market value. She may have been renting it for below market value.
If you are bringing in legislation that specifically guards against that, because nobody knows, and I'm not going to say that that wasn't the case, but we do know that other landlords are more unscrupulous. You can't be the minister who's bringing in legislation against it and then do it yourself, can you?
That's correct, yeah. That's why she resigned and she's gone.
So you say to the agents, they say, look, we've tried to sell it. Unfortunately, we can't move it on Mzali. So you say, OK, put it back on the market, but I don't want a penny more in rent. I mean, that's what you do, isn't it? Surely.
That's correct. 100%, yeah. I mean, like, as I said to your colleague, Nick, we've got a property we've been renting out in Dartford Town Centre.
Right.
And the tenant rang us the other day to say he's moving on, but we've been renting it for the last 14 years. He's been paying 50% less than the market rent.
Okay, so he's but that means you can now revert to proper market rent, can you?
Exactly. Right. But obviously, it's 14 years, you know, just think how much we've been losing in rent. But it's not a problem because it covers the mortgage and it leaves you a little bit of money.
Yeah, unless the boiler goes, though, Huss.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't have to tell me, but everyone I speak to who's in rentals say it has got incredibly tough. And while, yes, it wasn't a bad way to make a living, it's damned hard graft now for not a lot of money in many instances.
That's correct, 100%. Yeah. With the taxes and the expenses and, you know, the rent.
Are you going to stick with it, with all this new legislation that's coming in? Are you going to stick with rentals or might you move on, lastly, Huss?
Yes, no, we're going to stick with it. I mean, we're in Lewisham predominantly.
Right.
And Lewisham have brought out the selective licensing scheme. So, you know, we paid like £500-odd per year.
I do apologise. What does selective licensing mean?
Well, Lewisham Council brought out this licensing scheme for landlords where we have to license the properties prior to renting them out.
Right.
So we've paid like over £500 per property to get licences.
And that means that the boiler's safe and the windows are...
No. This is just the Lewisham Council, the local authority.
They just
take
£500 just because they want Lewisham.
Selective licensing... They charge us £500 plus per unit for a licence to say, oh, you know, we want to get rid of the horrible landlords and, you know, the rogue landlords. But we've been renting out in Lewisham for the last 30 years.
Honestly, who would be a renter? I know there will people be screaming, but when you think 65% are people who only have two or three properties. Huss, good luck. I'm late to the news. I've got to move on. Thanks, Huss. Coming up later in the show, your opportunities to put your calls to a chief constable who's actually leading a crackdown on crime. He's in West Midlands. It's Craig Guildford. His men and women had an operation to tackle e-bike crime.
Stop.
Okay.
Stand still. Get off your bike for me now.
I love it, don't you? That chief constable is with us later in the show. Plus, immediately after the news...
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. And I know too much to go back and pretend.
Not long to wait now, girls. Female Viagra is on the way. 7:47, jumbo time. LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Israel's security cabinet has voted to approve the military occupation of Gaza City. The UAE has emerged as a possible venue for a meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin as soon as next week. And the homelessness minister, Rishanara Ali, has resigned over a row about a rental property she owns in East London. LBC weather. Most of the UK dry with sunny spells, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Not looking good at all on the trains this morning. No services can currently run via Stevenage, and that's because of an investigation. But also, Thames Link and East Midlands Railway services are still severely disrupted via Radlett because of overhead wire problems. It also means that Thames Link services aren't running between South Croydon and East Grinstead and between London Bridge and Dartford. Elizabeth Line services still can't run between the Heathrow terminals, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. On the roads, long delays on the Surrey stretch of the M25 clockwise to junction 6 at Godstone. It's because the overnight works are finished late, and the A12 remains closed at northbound between junctions 19 at Boreham Interchange and junction 21A.
This is LBC.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNC's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you, for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crispin with Walker's. Delicious.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
With Little Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Little Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Little Plus and get a little bit more at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August, full T's and C's apply, see little.co.uk/spin.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
We got almost 8 minutes before eight is the time. Andrew, we're going to talk about the homelessness, now jobless minister. I'm going to tell you more about female Viagra and an even more powerful anti-weight or weight loss pill, I should say. I just want to say, Ross Bourne is furious with me. Have you just called being a landlord hard graft? Have you ever done a day's work that didn't involve sitting down? Yes, as a lad, I can shear a sheep, Mr. Bourne, and I have dagged sheep. You look it up. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but... You know what that word sounds like? Yeah, that's pretty much what you do around the back end of a sheep. You cut those bits off, right? Bear in mind he's had the fleece on all winter. So, yes, Mr. Bourne, you come back to me when you've had to shear a ton of sheep and we'll talk again, because that is a day's hard graft. And I think I've got a pound of sheep or something. I can't even remember what I've got now. Anyway, I am the only radio breakfast presenter who can say they can shear a sheep. Now that John Humphreys has hung up his shears. Let's come into other stories. A lot happening in the world of medicine. We have a new daily weight loss pill that can shed up to 2 stone in 18 months. This makes other drugs such as Manjaro or Ozempic just starters. Thanks to, why do they give them these names? Orforglipron. And also, interest to some, a female Viagra. Much to discuss with Dr. Philippa Kay, who is a GP, author of The Science of Menopause, Understand Your Body, Make the Right Choices. Doctor, good to have you on. Where do you want to go first, Viagra or weight loss? Good morning.
Good morning. I guess that depends what tickled your fancy this morning.
So how does female Viagra work?
Well, I think that, first of all, we need to be clear that Viagra doesn't actually increase your libido. What Viagra does is that it helps you get and maintain an erection.
Right.
And so often when we talk about the female Viagra, actually what we're talking about is libido as opposed to anything else. And this product, I have to say, I think has great marketing, but doesn't seem to have a lot of science behind it. It's called My Regina, and it's basically a hydrating...
My Regina. What an extraordinary name. Right, okay.
It seems to be a non-hormonal hydrating cream and a probiotic supplement that aims to treat genitourinary syndrome of the menopause. Now, after the menopause, the changing hormone levels mean that the tissues of the vagina and the female genitals get drier and less able to produce lubrication and the sexual response decreases. And this product is saying that it will help that at a cost of £53 for 3 months. And what I would say is that vaginal estrogen replaces the hormone which has come lower after the menopause. It only works locally in the female genitals. It helps prevent sex being painful, which would affect your libido. It helps prevent things like recurrent urinary tract infections. It is safe. It really doesn't have side effects and get absorbed into the rest of the body. It's available over the counter after conversation with your pharmacist and on prescription with your GP. And I would say that actually we should be going for that as opposed to things with perhaps less evidence behind them.
Wow. You should have been a journalist. You've done you've answered who, what, where, when, why, how. Those are the only six things. If you know who, what, where, when, why, how, you can do any story. So thank you, Philippa. Doctor. Who, what, where, when, why, how. Is this the heavyweight of weight loss drugs, this new one? How does one say it? Oh, Forlagbrun or something? What is it?
I wish they came with little sort of phonetic bits like a dictionary next to it. I think it's Orforglipron or Orforglipron.
Okay.
And it is a daily tablet as opposed to a daily or weekly injection. And it seems to work in the same way as the other weight loss medications. It decreases appetite, it increases satiety, so how full you feel. And this one, people seem to, in trials, have lost 12% of their body weight, on average 12 kilos, which is almost 2 stone, over about 16 months. Now, let's compare that to Mounjaro, which is the weekly injection. People lose 22% over the same amount of time. So it's not quite as good. And about 10% of people would stop this tablet in the trial due to side effects like nausea and vomiting. However, there's no needles here. And it is likely to be far cheaper to produce than the pens and the sort of the technology that goes into these pens, predisposable injections. And so what might happen, bearing in mind this medicine hasn't got a license yet, it's only going for approval, there is a competitor which currently has approval, what I'm expecting actually is that while the long-term amount of weight that you lose might not be as much as an injectable, if it is cheaper, we can get them to more people. And what we know is that for every 5% of body weight that you lose if you have obesity, the effects on your heart and your overall health are hugely significant. So sometimes we're not aiming for losing everything, but make enough to make a difference.
You know everything. I was going to say, if I have some holiday coming up, I think you should come and fill in for me, Doctor. You seem to know absolutely everything.
I would love to do that, Nick.
Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Your patients are very fortunate to have Dr. Philippa Kay as their GP. And the book, The Science of Menopause, Understand Your Body, Make the Right Choices. Doctor, thank you so much. I've learned a lot. And you put it in such, I always use the expression layman's terms, because I don't understand medical, I don't understand any matters, really. Thanks, Doctor. 3 to 8. Andrew's in Barnes. So farewell the homelessness, Minister. Your view on that? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I think really for two mistakes, she should have resigned. I think she was right to do that. I mean, you know, she was trying to sell.
Well, she was
a place
kind of forced into it. In fairness, Andrew, wasn't she?
Well, no, I mean, otherwise the alternative was to give a gift to whichever lucky tenant came in, and they would get the low rent. So my suggestion is she just should have said that she would give any uplift to a homeless charity. And, you know, the second mistake was, I think their spin doctors, you know, could have easily given her that advice when this first hit the press. And she could have said that at the beginning, you know. I think that would have been fine. But I think it's a lack of judgment and not enough common sense, really.
once you've got the charities going against you, once it's pointed out that you've actually benefited from legislation you're bringing through, that you have addressed. I think when charities take against you, probably the government finds themselves backed into a position out of which they can't really fight their way out of that. Andrew, lastly, what do you say to that?
Well, I completely agree. I mean, I think she should have made them her allies, really. But the Labour Party has an enormous pool of talent. I'm sure they'll find a new minister for her business.
Yes, well, they will have to. This, of course, forced to go. Again, let's give one final name check to the I newspaper, because they broke that story. Well done to Vicky Spratt, the journalist over there. Thanks for your input, Andrew. Have yourself a good weekend. OK, coming up after the news, we discussed the Kemi Badenoch interview that went out on the BBC in terms of her faith yesterday. Now it's her time in school.
I must have been about 14 or 15. And I said, he's cheating. I stood up in the middle of the exam and I stood up and said, he's cheating. He's the one that's doing it. And that boy ended up getting expelled.
Would you proclaim, boast about that? Plus,
they're fast, they're dangerous, and they're illegal. E-bikes capable of hitting 60 miles an hour, causing chaos on our streets. I'm LBC's George Ike, riding along with West Midlands Police as they crack down on them.
And George's report will be before the Chief Constable is here to take your calls on all policing matters. And if you fancy saving £2,500 off your electricity bill over 10 years, I'll give you the way to do it. 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock news next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Israel's security cabinet has voted by a majority for a plan to take over Gaza City. It marks a step towards Benjamin Netanyahu's stated aim of taking full control of the territory to remove Hamas. A major ground operation could displace tens of thousands more people. The Liberal Democrat deputy leader, Daisy Cooper, has condemned the latest Israeli proposal.
Well, I think that decision is horrifying, really really horrifying. I don't think it's going to make the Palestinian people any safer. I certainly don't think it's going to make the Israeli hostages any safer. And it will certainly make it harder to get to a two-state solution. There will not be a military end to this conflict.
In the last minute or two, Zakir Starmer said the Israeli government's decision to further escalate its offensive and take over Gaza City is wrong, and the UK urges it to reconsider immediately. Donald Trump says he is prepared to meet Vladimir Putin, despite the Russian leader's refusal to speak to Volodymyr Zelensky. His latest comments suggest the US and Russia could be closer to holding a summit on Ukraine. Moscow has suggested the UAE as a possible location for the talks. Military analyst Colonel Simon Diggins says the prospect of a breakthrough is limited.
There is no sign that Putin has changed any of his demands, his territorial demands, and his demands for what he calls a denazification of Ukraine from before, and therefore they are unacceptable to President Zelensky and to the Ukrainians, and therefore I cannot see an opportunity for them to meet. But I think Putin and Trump meeting, I think there is a chance of that.
The homelessness minister, Rishanara Ali, has resigned after being accused of hypocrisy over a rental property. She reportedly hiked the rent on the house in East London by £700 a month, just weeks after the previous tenant's contract ended. Ms. Ali's insisted she followed all legal requirements. Neighbours of newly built electricity pylons could get £250 a year off their energy bills for a decade. Ministers have announced more details of plans intended to overcome local opposition to energy infrastructure. The independent MP, Rupert Lowe, has admitted mistaking a charity rowing crew for small boat migrants. Mr. Lowe, formerly of Reform UK, posted a picture on social media last night with the caption, "Dinghies coming into Great Yarmouth right now." He's since made a donation to the rowers' charity, but says he won't apologise for being vigilant. In the city, the FTSE 100's reopening at 9,100 after closing down 63 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, most of the UK dry with sunny spells, some rain in northern Scotland, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
They've been building up to this all summer. Dad tucks into a tight 360 to the boot. A 90-degree rotation into the back seat from Sammy. And
a flawless double twist into the driver's seat.
Dive into a new Škoda with 0% APR across our range and an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit with Solutions PCP. The Škoda Summer Splash event. At local retailers until 31st of August. Indemnities may be required. Maximum terms apply depending on model. Minimum 20% deposit for Kamiq and Karoq. Delivery by 31st of December 25. Škoda Finance.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, it's 3 minutes after eight on Friday the 8th of August. What do you remember most about your school days? Perhaps you were pretty good at sport. Perhaps you captained the cricket or the hockey team. Perhaps you did rather well in exams. Perhaps you found the man or the woman that you love. Perhaps you managed to get a fellow pupil expelled. Well, that's what Kemi Badenoch seems to remember. And we'll ask about the rights and wrongs of that. In other news, staying with school, the idea that absences will push 180,000 pupils into unemployment. So-called NEETs. What needs to be done about that? And what needs to be done about cracking down on crime? Well, credit to West Midlands. So often we talk about the scourge of those e-bikes. Well, the chief constable there decided he'd send his men and women out, his troops out, to do something about it. And it's proved very successful. They're also getting knife crime down, although they are faced with many challenges. Well, the West Midlands Chief Constable is here in the next hour taking your calls, not just, of course, on matters in the West Mids. It is one of the biggest police forces in the land, so he can address all matters policing.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I'm going to play you a little bit of the interview that Kemi Badenoch did with the BBC that went out last night. Around this time yesterday, we were speaking with her views that she's a Christian, that she doesn't believe in God, but she does believe in calling out cheats. Is she right? Just before we pay you a little bit of what she said, I take you back to your school days. What do you remember most? If someone asked you, how was school? What would you say? Oh, do you know what? I loved history so much, I decided to become a historian, or I wrote a book, or I studied, or I teach it now, or I met my wife, I met my husband, I met whatever. I met fantastic children, all met at school. Or I captained the second 15, rugby, and we went unbeaten for the season. Or I played in goal, hockey, while I was in the penalty shootout, and I won. Or would you remember the day you got a fellow pupil expelled?
Person, I was the tattletale in the class, like getting people into trouble. Because I hated cheating, because there I was, I wanted to be first in the class, and I've done all the work, and then there's some people who are copying notes and saying, why should they get away with it? And so I'd raise up my hand. I remember there was this extraordinary day, I must have been about 14 or 15, and I said, he's cheating. I stood up in the middle of the exam, and I stood up and said, he's cheating, he's the one that's doing it. And that boy ended up getting expelled. And I didn't get praised for it. And I was a relatively popular kid at school. And he said, why did you do that? Why would you do that? And I said, because he was doing the wrong thing. And someone said, you don't belong here. That you don't know how to behave. You don't belong here. And I've heard that all my life.
Honestly, if I hadn't cheated at exams, I'd still be doing my 11 plus. But is that something we should celebrate? Zoe Williams, columnist for The Guardian, broadcaster and author, joins me now. You, Zoe, would have been top of the class, year in, year out, walking off with all the awards at prize giving or whatever. Would you have called out a fellow pupil? Morning, Zoe.
Morning, Nick. No, that's not true, by the way. I was not top of the class. No, I mean, there's so much about this story that absolutely stinks that I'm kind of unwilling to take it on its own terms. It's interesting to me, for example, that this wasn't a public exam she's talking about. So she's talking about a completely untested event that only her memory relates and nobody can check. And it strikes me, just knowing the kind of politician Kemi Badenoch is, that it just doesn't have the ring of truth.
What kind of politician is she then, Zoe?
Well, come on. She does have a tendency to come out with things that are not founded in observable fact or reality. And this seems to me to join that pantheon. You know, she's trying to associate herself with the kind of person who calls out cheats of all kinds.
I don't mind being unpopular. I'm going to get things done, that kind of stance.
Exactly. But it's also kind of, I'm going to call out cheats, and cheats make you think of benefits cheats and asylum seeker cheats. And, you know, she's trying to situate herself politically with this story that nobody can check. And I bet you, if you went to any school in the land and said, would you expel somebody for cheating in a not even public exam, they would say no, that would be hysterical.
Well, just to clarify, this apparently took place in school in Nigeria. Now, I don't know where the rules... I've never been to Nigeria, certainly never been to school in Nigeria. But again, to your point, Zoe, this... respectfully makes it even more difficult to verify or otherwise.
Yeah, and so I think she's using it politically, but
does it work? Would you want to vote? Now, hang on, suspend your political beliefs, and I respect them, and I read you in The Guardian, so just suspend them and pretend you're a floating voter. Would you be turned on by someone who is a telltale?
No, not remotely, and I think this is where she may have overshot the mark a little bit, because she's trying to associate herself as a kind of scourge of freeloading and cheating, but actually everybody has immense sympathy with that person in class who's completely baffled, who hasn't done the reading, who didn't know there was a test. You know, everybody, if anything, she's going to activate our circuits of kind of empathy and fellow feeling by accident.
Poor advice. What's she trying to achieve here, lastly, do you think?
She's just trying to achieve, like, her the kind of tough-minded stance that, you know, I've heard your listeners really into. But I think all of us have two sides to us. You know, we want to get things done, but we also want to feel things for other humans.
I think you're right. Zoe, always enjoy speaking. Have a good show for a good weekend. Zoe Williams is a columnist for The Guardian, broadcaster and author. She and I agree on just about everything politically, but get on like the proverbial house. So be well, Zoe. Have a good weekend. Let's bring into the conversation 9 minutes after eight a professional teacher. David Lee Allen is executive director of the Suffolk Association of Secondary Head Teachers and was a head teacher himself. Joins me now. Would you support a telltale, someone who dobbed a fellow pupil in? Morning to you.
Good morning. Well, yes, you support all students, and...
But those actions?
If this did happen, I agree with Zoe, it all sounds very tenuous, really, doesn't it? But, if a student comes to you and says that there's some cheating going on with something like this, you can't ignore them.
No.
You know, it presents a very difficult thing, yet you have to act on it.
Has it ever happened, if I may call you David, I hope you didn't think that's too forward, David, has it ever happened in your teaching career that someone said, sir, let's use me, Ferrari over there is cheating, he's got his times table on the back of his ruler?
Yes, you do get that, but it doesn't tend to be this sort of scenario that Kemi puts forward about, you know, standing up in the middle of the exam shouting out. It tends to be more like someone hanging around at the end of school, you know, sort of that pops into your classroom and says, sir, did you know that this is going on? Mm. You know, and I don't want anyone to know about it. But this,
and what action would you then, having been told that Ferrari is cheating exams, what action would you take with a recalcitrant pupil?
Well, if it wasn't the public examinations, then of course you've got a range of sanctions. You'd investigate it, you'd find it. So, for example, at my school one time, some students were using computers, and these computers were supposedly not connected to the internet at all, so they couldn't have spell check and all these kind of things. And it was in a practice exam, and we found that someone reported and said, they've got past the system.
That's the trouble with children, they'll find a way through.
They do indeed. So, of course, you know, you sanction them, you give them detention, stuff like this, you call the parents in and you say how dreadful this is, quite rightly, and that if they did it during their main exams, they could have all their exams cancelled. Mm. And then you change the systems. And, you know, that's just the sensible way of doing it. But you try to protect that student who's revealed it, you know, because the students do have a sense of great fairness about themselves. And if they do see the one bit about Kemi's story, which I kind of get, is that idea of if you're the person who has worked hard and you do see other people around you, who are skimming it in some kind of way, there are, you know, lots of examples where students feel that's not right. But they don't necessarily do it in that kind of pompous way that she seems to have projected.
David, thanks for your time today. Enjoy your weekend. David Lee Allen, Executive Director of the Suffolk Association of Secondary Head Teachers, a former head teacher himself. Let's get into your calls on this. The school I went to, we would no sooner have dobbed someone in. You just didn't. Certainly, not for cheating in exams. Attempted murder. I mean, I still regret. I should have said, no, I'm kidding. Of kidding, of course, that didn't happen. Of course, but this isn't a criminal offence. Georgetta is in Amsterdam. What can you tell me? Good morning, Georgetta.
Morning, Nick. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to say, like, there's a lot that doesn't make sense from what Kemi's saying.
Yes.
So I was raised in an East African country, and I went to school there. I would imagine the school system may be similar.
Can I ask which country? Do you mind if I ask which country?
Malawi.
Malawi. Okay. Yep. Okay. How strict are schools in Malawi?
Say that again.
How strict are the schools in Malawi?
They are very strict, and you know, in terms of offering discipline to children. But I've been in exam rooms where people were cheating, and they were called out. And it wasn't as punitive as Kemi's putting it, like someone being expelled.
Mm.
It was literally the teachers went up to the student in question, took the paper off and said, carry on doing your exam without this paper, the extra paper that, you know.
That you smuggled in, that you hidden and got it. Yeah.
Mm. So it's what she's saying, I don't know about that. It might be different in Nigeria where she comes from. But also what I wanted to say is, like, in a lot of parts of Africa, like, education is the root way out of poverty.
Mm.
So everyone respects that. The teachers respect that. The parents respect that. And it's a fee-paying system.
Georgetta, so you can't can I take you back to your classroom in Malawi, and you're doing an exam and you see a pupil clearly cheating? Would you stand up and say, sir, miss, whatever, that pupil there, they're cheating?
I probably would. I probably would.
Why?
But I wouldn't, because it's, we've all, you're not supposed to cheat in an exam. You're supposed to read, revise, and but I would call them out, but I wouldn't want them expelled. I think that's the bit I've got a problem with.
Great speaking with you, particularly with reference to your experience of education in Africa in Malawi. Georgetta, have yourself a good weekend. Thank you. You're in a school exam, or if you want a state exam, I don't care, GCSE, and you see a fellow pupil cheating, would you call them out on it? And your viewer, Kemi Badenoch, who seems, I have to say, to proclaim her actions, in a sense. Also, coming up later in this hour, if you want to save £2,500 off your energy bill, I'll be telling you how you can do it. 8:15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Sir Keir Starmer has urged the Israeli government to reconsider immediately its plan to take over Gaza City. Donald Trump says he's prepared to meet Vladimir Putin, despite the Russian leader's refusal to speak to Volodymyr Zelensky. And the homelessness minister, Roshanara Ali, has resigned after being accused of hypocrisy over a rental property. LBC weather, most of the UK dry with sunny spells, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Big problems on the trains. No services can run via Stevenage. That's LNER, Great Northern and Thameslink. It's because of this ongoing investigation. Also on the trains, Elizabeth Line services aren't running between the Heathrow terminals, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. On the roads, delays on the M25 in Surrey, anti-clockwise. Just after the Clackett Lane services, there's been an accident. So two lanes are closed and it's very busy on the approach. Also, the A12 remains closed at northbound between junctions 19 at the Boreham Interchange and 20A at Hatfield Peveril South. It's because of a serious accident. It's slow from junction 18.
This is LBC.
I'd never driven electric before, but wow, MG's EV range blew me away. And when I heard I could save up to £2,500, I was sold. Combining the MG EV car grant and £1,000 test drive discount, save up to £2,500 on a brand new MG EV from MG, Autocar's best manufacturer 2025. Book your test drive today at mg.co.uk. Registered by September 30th. Includes £1,000 test drive discount plus £1,500 EV car grant. Retail and affinity customers only. Excludes Cybester and MGIM range.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T. Top up on island fuel. R. Rest every 2 hours too. I. Inspect tire pressure and tread. P. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like?
Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Come to your calls in a moment. Let's just go to some of the texts and social media. Paul in Pinner. No one likes a grass, Nick, but sometimes it's worth not being liked. That being said, I wouldn't do it. Okay, I'm there now. Colin says, let's ask for the person who dobbed to call in, or who was dobbed in to call in, eh? I wonder what they're doing now. Well, I sense he's probably in Nigeria, so it might be a bit of a stretch. Now, here, this is interesting. If I'm saying it correctly, Tolulula says, this is very common in Nigeria. I grew up, I went to school in Nigeria, and there are many kids like Kemi. It's interesting how she's first name, isn't it? They'll be delighted with that. It's like Boris. Do you remember? Very few politicians manage to get on just first name terms. But if you listen back to what we were saying, everybody said Kemi said, Zoe just used Kemi, the head teacher, Kemi. Anyway, there are many kids like Kemi, says Tolulula. This is very common, and she would have been praised by all her teachers. John, cheating is dishonesty. Is dishonesty something to be condoned or even tolerated? I'd have liked to call out a cheater, but may not have had the courage. Oh, here we go. Damien and I went to school in Jamaica. For some of my childhood, there was a no-tell culture, even in schools. It's led to adults who'll see a major crime happen immediately in front of them and would still not tell the police. Goodness me. We're all over the place now. Lastly, let's get one more into these. This is from Michael. I'm shortening. Gosh, you've said this is a long one. Michael says she's such a hypocrite. If the story is true, then the boy cheating makes no difference to her grades. She said he was really popular. I think you mean she was really popular, which tells me she didn't think it was fair. Popular, and he... Oh, I see. And he was popular and she wasn't. I see what you're saying. OK, who's been holding on? Stephen in Woking. Stephen, your take on this.
Yeah, morning, Nicky. Yeah, I think I'm in Nigeria. I think what Kemi said...
Did you say you're Nigerian? Sorry, just...
Yeah,
You are Nigerian.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were educated in Nigeria?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think this would happen in a school there?
Yeah, but no student will be expelled for that in a secondary school. Not even in a university. The highest you can get is maybe a 2-year suspension. So you have to come back after 2 years and then you begin from where you stop. So I think it's overly exaggerated. Kemi is like one of those kids in Nigeria, those they would call them busybody. They just jump into everything. Nobody's going to report that.
Mm-hmm.
I was also topping my class when I was in my secondary school, but I wouldn't report a friend or anybody who is cheating because I know what they're doing is not going to affect my grades. So basically, I would not report it.
What do you think of Kemi Badenoch now?
Kemi Badenoch is just an attention seeker. She just wants to fit in. So she gets into complicated issues like, I don't want to be a Christian anymore. The secondary school I went to is a prison. All of that, thinking that she can fit in, that's going to make people fall in love with her. But she's rather ruining her own chances of ever becoming maybe the prime minister. Or no, because somebody like me, I'm not going to vote for Kemi Badenoch because she's not attacking issues the way they should be attacked. Because my secondary school was not a prison. I cut the grass when I was in secondary school. The resilience that I learned in Nigeria is what's paying me through in England today. I'm a teacher here. I'm a physics teacher in this country. And then
Well done. What subject do you teach, Stephen?
I teach physics.
Well done. And good luck. We need as many teachers as we can. Stephen, thank you. Graham Hennigan, she's looking for attention. Standing up an exam, pointing out a cheat. Look at me. I'm calling out a cheat. Aren't I great? She's just looking for attention. Same subject, Kieran in North Norfolk. This is a joke. And her bragging about being a snide tittle-tattle, it just shows how much of a hypocrite she must be. She was there under Boris Johnson. Do your listeners recall her being a bastion of truth at that time? Anthony in Erith. Anthony, your take on this story. Good morning.
Yeah, I think Kemi Badenoch is a liar.
Right. I think we can probably let go. I'd be delighted for her to ring in and challenge. Go on.
So first, last week in an interview, she said she went to a federal government secondary school in a place called Shagan, which is of an all-girls school. And at the same time, at the same age grade, she...
Hang on. Where was that interview? Yeah. We need to look into this. So she said in an interview last week she went to an all-girls school.
Yes.
Can you tell me the name of the town again?
A federal government girls' school in Shagan.
Do you mind if I ask how you're spelling Shagan?
S-H-A-G-A-M-U.
Shagamu.
Yeah.
Right, okay, right. So she goes then supposedly to an all-girls school in Shagamu, but she calls out a boy for cheating.
Calls out a boy for cheating.
Ah, we might have a problem
now. Now, the thing is, it was an interview, yes, and a week after she now says she called out a boy somewhere.
Sorry to talk over you, sir. She went to the Federal Government Girls College Sagamu, Ogun State, Nigeria. She called it was like being a prison experience. So if she's at an all-girls school, how did this lad manage to take the exam with her?
Take the exams. And if you go to her Wikipedia page, that's not the school that's on her Wikipedia page. On her Wikipedia page is an international secondary school in Lagos.
There might be she left schools, in fairness. We don't have a...
List the schools. If you're the opposition leader...
No, I know.
List the schools, but don't keep giving conflicting stories. That's why I think she told a lie.
Well, now, I'm most grateful for that, and thank you to my colleague who moved very quickly. And this was only published, last week that she was talking... Well, did it... Well, she's going to have to answer this next time she gives an interview, because it would appear the leader of the opposition attended an all-girls school in Sagamu, but managed to call a boy out in exams. Anthony, well done. Let's see how that works out. We'll have more on this to come, 8:25. In a related story, almost 180,000 pupils are set to leave school and fall into unemployment or long-term economic inactivity as a result of persistent absence. The Centre for Social Justice has warned that without action, school absence would drive up what are known as NEETs, young people neither in education, employment or training. The figure is almost double what it had been had absent rates returned to pre-COVID levels, and will cost the taxpayer £14 billion. I mentioned the Centre for Social Justice. Joe Shalam is its Director of Policy. Got a solution, Joe? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, firstly, I think it's worth just reflecting on the action that's been taken already. And I think that, you know, ministers, teachers, parents across the country deserve credit for beginning to turn the tide on this. We've seen an analysis put out by the CSJ yesterday, a 9% fall in persistent absence, but it is still 40% higher than before the pandemic, and severe absence is at a record high. So we do need to take a new approach to this, one that gets to grips with it in a kind of emergency response sense, but also one that tackles the root causes that are driving absence in the first place.
And they are?
So there are a number of things that we've called for at the CSJ. The first is a programme of attendance mentors. Now, what we do at the CSJ is work with small charities across the UK. And what we've seen is that an approach that gets really close to families, understands the complex barriers. Sometimes you've got a child that simply will refuse to come out of their bedroom, works with those families to understand what's happening and builds a programme to return them to school. It can work, and the evidence is there for that. We need to get these mentors rolled out across the country. But we also need to address some uncomfortable truths, which are that since the pandemic, we have seen a softening in attitudes among parents about the importance of sending your kids to school. About 3 in 10 parents now say that it's no longer essential for your child to attend every single day. So I think we've got to get the right mix of sanction and encouragement here.
When the history books are written, do you imagine, Joe, that the decision to close the schools as quickly and for as long as they did will go down as one of the biggest missteps?
I think that this is still sending a shockwave through our society, and we found this in a major inquiry hosted by the CSJ a couple of years ago, that we're only now beginning to see the full implications of all the sorts of decisions that were made. And I think, you know, earlier on in the pandemic, perhaps more licence, but later on with repeated school shutdowns, this is sending a bow wave through the school system still, and indeed, as we found, through the economy, with a conveyor belt of school absence into inactivity and worklessness, and that has implications for all of us.
Joe Shalem, thanks. You're Director of Policy at the CSJ, the Centre for Social Justice. We might take your calls on that, but it's Mrs. Badenoch and her checkered school history that's dominating our conversation at the moment. Chiogo is in Leeds. What can you tell me, Chiogo?
Hi, Lika. Thanks for having me.
Hello, Chiogo.
I'm just a bystander. I don't stand for or against this, but I'm just going to point out that, yes, there are schools like that, and there are private, high-value schools that can encourage students to stand upright in exam halls and point to a cheater. And Kemi, knowing the kind of person she is, she seems like she has the courage to be disliked. It's not something that is popular or something you'd want to be part of, but it's encouraged. And for the caller that called in to say that she has a different school, I went to a different junior high school, and then I went to a federal government college as well as my senior college education, so she could have different school backgrounds. I don't think that's something to dispute with her.
How old do all pupils go to a federal government college then?
It's very much, it's a high value school, so it's something that is encouraged.
What age would you go to at FGC?
So I went in my senior secondary, so I was around 13 years, and I finished at 16, so it's a 3-year senior secondary school education, and most people do it just for building communities and mixing with people that you normally not mix with in your community. It's a federal government school, so it means the whole country gets to attend it. So it's a very high privilege school.
Are they ever mixed?
Yes, I went to a mixed one.
They can be mixed, okay.
Yes.
So, Chiogo, my final question, and I'm not going to ask which way you vote, but when you hear this come from the leader of the opposition, does it make you more likely to vote for Kemi Badenoch's party, less likely, or have zero influence?
I think it makes me want to vote for her, because I think that's important. I think the courage to be disliked is very important, Nick. You don't have to. The most important thing is that we're looking for honesty, we're looking for accountability in our leaders, and that's something that she's saying she has. I don't know if she does, but it's something that is unique, it's different, and it's got us talking today about it. So
she certainly has. Chiogo, have a great weekend. Thank you very much for your input. It's been lovely talking to you and your experience of being in the Nigerian education system. Now, coming up later in the show, as it would appear, the one-in, one-out deal is on the verge of collapse. We'll look at how they've taken a rather different line over in the United States and indeed promoted it with videos put out by the White House.
Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. And right now, you can save £50 per
person.
And
this is as people are being led off into aircrafts, they're being handcuffed, they're being shipped out of the country. There is concern, of course, by the artists that they would use those videos, but they're powerful. Well, guess what? Yesterday, after all my months of moaning about why do we never see videos, guess what was put out by number 10? Their faces blurred out, both the officers involved and the people being led out of the country. It's a different approach. You can see both of them on lbc.co.uk. We'll be discussing them later in the show. As we can say that one in, one out, cross-channel deal is virtually sunk. 8:31, breakfast is me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Sir Keir Starmer has urged Israel to reconsider its plan to occupy Gaza City. Benjamin Netanyahu's war cabinet has approved proposals for a major escalation in the conflict. The United Arab Emirates has emerged as the possible venue for talks between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Moscow has suggested the summit on Ukraine could take place as soon as next week. People living near newly built electricity pylons could get £250 a year off their energy bills. The plans are intended to overcome local opposition to infrastructure like pylons and transmission cables. LBC weather, most of the country dry with sunny spells, some rain in the north of Scotland, a high of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too, because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks.
T. Tap upon island fuel.
F-R.
necessary 2 hours to I inspect tire pressure and tread. Be prepared for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Because you never know what little pickles they'll get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Train to Pevensey Bay. Beach, mates, cooler. Oh,
Danny, you got the hummus, yeah?
Of course.
Now this is what it's all about. Time to relax.
Huh? Frisbee? No, you two crack on.
Just made the train. Now home to over half the beach from my bag. 10 out of 10 day, though.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
You listen to LBC 833, and we're discussing this problem, possibly, for Kemi Badenoch. We're also going to come on, give you the opportunity to speak to the Chief Constable of West Midlands Police, a force that's cracking down on crime. And I read a lot of emails and texts. I think this one, you might have come in the wrong one. This comes in, John, I was coming round with the apples later in the morning that I can bring, Sam. We're out at four, so I can only do a short walk for about half an hour. Would that be any good? I don't think that's meant... Well, I don't need any apples today, thank you. And I don't think you know where I live, but maybe you want to think... Whoever's in need of your apples, they'll get the pip if you don't get round to them. Right, I've referenced your opportunity to speak to Chief Constable of West Midlands Police, one of the nation's biggest police forces, and where they have had a crackdown on crime that troubles a lot of us across the whole of the country, is e-bikes. And the numbers of those have been seized, multiple arrests made during a dramatic police operation around Birmingham aimed at tackling the growing danger played by or even posed by these bikes. It involved officers from Immigration Enforcement, BTP, British Transport Police, and the city's Road Harm Prevention Team. They descended on Birmingham's busiest streets and targeted riders of e-bikes that had been illegally tampered with to get to speeds of up to 60 miles an hour, way above the legal limit. LBC's reporter George Icke was offered the opportunity to go along with West Midlands Police, and he filed this report.
Stop.
Okay.
Stand still, get off your bike for me now.
You've probably seen them whizzing past you at great speeds. You might have had a narrow miss, or even been hit by one. E-bikes, they're in virtually every city, but police in Birmingham are now clamping down on the dangerous and illegal ones. That was the moment two riders were hauled off their e-bikes on Corporation Street, one of the busiest walkways in Birmingham.
My name's Scott Taylor, I'm the City Centre Inspector. We have ongoing problems with e-bikes and e-safety, and we are looking to reduce the risk of harm to the public. What we've found with the first bike we've stopped today is that the bike has been converted. So it should be able to go up to 15.5 miles an hour. The bike we've just stopped can go up to 30 plus miles an hour. So that turns it effectively into a motor vehicle, which means it's not insured.
Earlier this week, one of our team at LBC in the Midlands, Ella Hargett-Dash, was hit by an e-bike.
I was just taking a walk down the canal in Birmingham, like I do every day, and a man on an e-bike came up behind me and literally hit my arm, twisted me round, crashed into the side. And then I was on the floor, I was crying, I'd hurt my arm, and this man just was looking at his bike.
Scott Taylor from West Midlands Police told LBC why these bikes are so problematic.
The rider's not likely to have a licence, and travelling at 30 miles an hour and sometimes 40 and 50 through a highly populated area where there's a lot of footfall every day, it's just waiting for an accident to happen, so we're trying to prevent that.
Police are also working alongside Immigration when cracking down on food delivery riders on dangerously modified e-bikes.
They're not free to leave. Do you understand? Well, we'll repeat it when the interpreter gets here, sir. Apparently, you're not free to leave, OK? You're under arrest for immigration purposes.
Matthew Foster is the lead for Immigration Enforcement here in the West Midlands.
What we find is where there's unlawful use of e-bikes, whether they're overpowered or various other misuse of these e-bikes, we find a good proportion of the riders are either subject to immigration control or they could be illegally present in the UK.
planned raids on the bikes are continuing to take place every few weeks, and on one of the evenings LBC joined officers, 16 bikes were seized in around an hour and were taken to be destroyed. And officers are now expanding their operation into other areas like Coventry to try and bring down the number of collisions and near misses.
That was LBC's George Ike reporting, reminding you, you have the opportunity to put your calls to the Chief Constable of the force involved there, the West Midlands Force, just after nine. And obviously we'll all send our wishes to our global colleague, Ella Hargett-Dash, who was hit by a bike and featured in George's report. 8:38. Let's come back to our conversation about Kemi Badenoch. Edwin's in Croydon. Edwin, are you more likely to vote for as a result of this? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Nice to speak to you. I'm a first-time caller.
Hello. Good to have you on, sir. What are you going to tell me?
Yes, about Kemi, my sister.
Your sister?
I'm just joking. Yes.
Oh, right. Okay. What
I want to say is this. Are we really surprised? I mean, this is the Trump era. I mean, this is the Britain where we get news about an American president, a foreign president, every single day in our news. And what is Trump? What does Trump embody, for example? Lies, controversies. We call him attention seeking. Maybe Kemi is just getting with the program. Kemi is just doing what is, seems to be normal these days. Trump, we tell this record, is on his second tenure as president. Now, about lying about his school or something, about that allegation, what about Rachel Reeves, our current finance minister, our chancellor? They said she doctored a CV, right?
Well, right? It does appear that she suggested she was in a far more senior position at the bank than she really was.
You see, okay. The point is made that there's controversy around that. Now, if there's a similar controversy about Kemi, what's so special? Look at Boris Johnson. When Boris Johnson was prime minister, so much controversies, lies, alleged lies, controversies, attention seeking behavior.
Does it not bother you?
Personally, I wouldn't say it bothers me per se. I will tell you why. Somebody. Right. I mean, Kemi, we've learned a bit about Kemi's character. Somebody who calls out lack of integrity. Somebody's cheating in an exam, right? And she's saying that, look, I called out this person. The person was reported. The person was expelled. Is that not a good thing as far as integrity is concerned?
Would you feel happy if you had a fellow pupil expelled? I wouldn't.
No. The point is this. It's not for her. It is one thing to report something. So whether the student was expelled...
If that had happened, would you feel good about it?
I wouldn't necessarily feel good about that because I'm not going to get anything out of it. But reporting wrongdoing is wrong. In terms of principle, is that not who you want to be your prime minister? Somebody who has integrity, demonstrable integrity, even though the outcome...
I don't... I use the word telltale or tittle-tattle or dob people in. I don't want... listen, if this person... If they were in paid employment, I understand. But they're both, I don't know, 14, 15, whatever they are. They are children. I don't want to vote for someone who relishes the fact that she ended another child's education. I find that really difficult.
Okay. If she's putting it out there, also almost as if like an achievement. Oh, I did this, and this person was expelled. Of course, I don't think that is right. That is not right. You shouldn't come across as you're celebrating somebody else's downfall because it is the only point I'm saying.
Let me quote what she said. I liked being the person who had the guts to do those things, as in call this fellow pupil. She liked doing it. I don't. Adults, if she'd called someone out for cheating in business, not doing probably stealing money, fraud. Yeah, fine. They're kids, for the love of God.
Unfortunately, I guess what you're saying. I get what you're saying. The character with which she said it, right? Unfortunately, it's going to come across as if she's a sadist. Unfortunately, that's not going to be a matter for her. I'm sorry.
All right, Edwin, I've enjoyed our conversation. Be like Edwin. Get it off your chest. Get it on the radio. First time, first class. Edwin, I look forward to hearing from you again, but I've got to move on to other callers. Thank you. Peter's in Harlow. Peter, hello. Your reaction. Hello.
Hello, Nick. Yeah, nice talking to you.
Yes.
First time talking to you as well. This time, Nick, I think you're on the wrong side of the argument.
Oh, right.
Because what Kemi did is the right thing, isn't it?
Is the right thing?
She did the right thing. I mean, integrity, that's leadership. She stopped about the wrongdoing.
Right.
Yeah.
And some poor lad lost his place at school.
That's the consequences.
You'd have done that?
Very much so.
Right. Why do you want to dob in your fellow pupils? What do you get from it?
We get to straighten things. Why should the other pupil cheat? Get
it's
ahead
not
in the
your
exam.
Brain. It's not going to affect you, is it?
It does.
How? If you've done your studies...
If you study genuinely and someone copies and then they're ahead of you, how fair is that?
You're still going to get your B grade or whatever grade you're going to get.
Yeah, but it would be better if that person is in the right place where they're meant to be.
But they're children.
Also,
did you regularly tell tales, tittle-tattle at school?
I'm actually also from Africa. I'm from Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of that cheating and everything. Mm-hmm. But if we don't stop such things, we're encouraging people to do the wrong thing while we're all watching.
Okay.
Well, recently, Nick, you said that someone stole your car, isn't it?
Yes.
What if you get to know that your neighbor witnessed the whole thing but didn't tell you? How would you like that?
But my neighbor's an adult.
That's even if they're...
And this is a criminal activity that ultimately could lead to someone going to jail. Cheating in an exam at school is not the same as being complicit in vehicle theft.
It's related. If your neighbor watches it, what you're supporting is people to not snitch. Okay? If your neighbor watched the whole thing, they say hello to you every day, they're your mate.
Yeah.
But you're saying that they should not tell you because they don't benefit from it? Shame on you, Nick. Shame. You're in the wrong side of it today.
Shame on me.
Let the woman do the right thing. She's a good leader, and that's good leadership that she's showing.
Okay, Peter, thank you. Let's agree to disagree agreeably. That's what we do. I utterly respect your position. I'm still going to state my position, but have a good weekend, Peter. Thank you. KK in Loughton. KK, you're on the radio. Hello.
Hi, Nick. First time caller, I am.
Good to have you on, KK.
Thank you. Right, with Kemi, I think I'd like to clarify one thing about her schools.
Yes.
She did go to Federal Government Girls College, Sagamu.
Yes.
She also went to the International School in Lagos.
Right.
That's the first.
Okay, which was the form? Which one did she go to first out of those two?
I believe it was Sagamu, the girls' school.
So she'd have left about 16 to go to the late school in Lagos?
I'm not sure what year she left, but, you know, I wouldn't be able to answer that.
Okay, all right, okay, yeah.
Right, about the cheating, if this did happen, I believe that Kemi has very conveniently embellished the truth.
Right.
I don't believe that any student will get expelled from a secondary school for cheating. The worst that would happen,
yeah.
And by the way, I did my master's in Nigeria, so I think I'm kind
of... Yeah, you're in a better position than I am. Yeah.
I think the worst that would have happened was that student would have had to maybe repeat the year, but you won't even repeat the year for just failing a subject.
I see.
Maybe the student would have been asked to start all over again.
Okay. So let me finally finish our conversation by asking... I don't want to know which way you vote, but would you be more likely, less likely, or not be influenced at all voting for Kemi Badenoch as a result of this?
Absolutely not. I don't vote conservative. I vote Labour. That's okay. Under question now.
Right.
But definitely not a Kemi fan.
Thanks for all the background, KK. Have yourself a good day. We're at 8:46. Coming up after the news, how you could save, thousands of pounds off your electricity bill over a period of time. We'll be giving you the outline of that after this. 8:46, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The Prime Minister has called on Israel to reconsider its plan to occupy Gaza City. The UAE has emerged as a possible venue for talks between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. And people living near newly built electricity pylons could be given £250 a year off their energy bills. LBC weather. Most of the UK dry with sunny spells. A high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. These big problems on the trains do continue. There are no services via Stevenage. It's because of an ongoing investigation. So that includes Great Northern, LNER and also Thameslink. But then also Thameslink and East Midlands Railway services are severely disrupted via Radlett because of overhead wire problems. Elizabeth Line services are now running between the Heathrow terminals, but with delays. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Northern Line. And then there are minor delays on the Piccadilly, Baker Bakerloo and Jubilee. On the roads, the A12 remains closed northbound between junctions 19 at the Boreham Interchange and 28 Hatfield Peveril South. It's because of a serious accident.
LBC.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £172 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits.
What? Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
Imagine your dream holiday made possible by comparing cheap flights on Kayak. Walking on an unspoilt goes on for miles beach on the Sardinian coast. Plunging into the splendor of an idyllic lagoon in Greece. Ah, yes, this is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare prices from hundreds of travel sites and airlines to find your dream deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply. Subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks.
T, top up on island fuel. Every 2 hours to I inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before nine, and I said before the news bulletin there, do you fancy getting more than £2,000, £2,500 off your electricity bill? It will take some time, but the saving is to be had. And here to spell out how you can get the cash in your pocket, your purse, your wallet is Labour MP and Minister for Energy Consumers, Miatta Van Bulle. Good to have you on, Minister. How can my listeners get their hands on the loot? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. So The principle behind this policy is we know we need to build out our energy security, our energy infrastructure. We need to do that if we want to guarantee energy security and critically, if we want to give people homegrown, affordable energy. And our view is that if we are developing and building out energy infrastructure like pylons, then it is absolutely right that communities that host that infrastructure should have a stake. And so the idea behind this is that they will get a discount on their bills, £250, as you said, a year for 10 years in order to ensure that they are directly benefiting from the vital infrastructure that we need to build across the country.
How far away does the pylon have to be?
Within 500 metres is what we're proposing.
And if, let's say there's people in a certain part of rural ground, I don't know, half of them do want it and half of them don't, what would happen to that application then, Minister?
Well, look, there are two separate things. There is a planning process and a planning application, and that will apply in the right ways, and decisions will be made based on the kind of balance of judgment that the planning system makes. Then there is a separate bit, which is we are building infrastructure. We are building the energy system of the future, and we think it's really important that people have a stake so that when development happens, when you get a pylon, you feel that you're a direct beneficiary. And that is the sort of, if you like, the return, the upside, the gains that communities have.
What is the goal that you and your colleagues have? How many pylons would you like to see put up over the coming year or years?
Well, look, proposals are coming through at the moment. There are schemes that are live. There are schemes that we expect. But what I would say is we are in the ludicrous situation at the moment where we're having to turn off wind farms because the grid and our transmission system can't cope with the amount of energy that they're being provided, and we're paying them to do that. That's costing us about £4 billion, 45 to 50 quid on energy bills, and that is a situation that we want to turn around by making sure that we've got the infrastructure in order to make sure that we're getting vital energy into homes, and critically that that energy is homegrown, it's clean, it's affordable. That's what people need.
And we can't bank that power, Minister. There's no way we can put it into some kind of holding pattern, holding system.
So not at the moment, but we are doing things like trying to build up storage capacity, trying to build up batteries to do that. But there is a huge amount of work that we need to do to get our energy system fit and ready, to get the investment into it so that we do have energy security. And, you know, one of our frustrations looking back at the last 15 years is that not enough was done, and we're trying to crack on with it and make sure that we are absolutely putting in place the development and we're building for the country. But that is a partnership with communities, so they've got to have an upside as well.
What does success look like here, Minister? How many pylons would you hope to be speaking about in 6 or 12 months' time?
Well, look, it takes time to build pylons. There are lots of schemes that are going through at the moment. I think what we are really clear on is that we need more. It is for developers to come forward with schemes that says this is the infrastructure that we need. The transmission networks are working with our Ofgem, with NESO, in order to come up with a plan for the country. And then that will go through the planning system. But from our perspective, and what we're trying to do through this policy, is to say communities must have their stake, they must get a share, there must be a direct benefit.
On a related conversation, there are concerns being expressed about so-called faulty smart meters. I'm sure you are aware of that. What action were you calling for here, Minister?
So this is really important. You know we need to upgrade and make our energy system modernised. And smart meters, rolling that out in people's homes, is a really important part of that. But if people have smart meters installed, they want to have the confidence to know that those smart meters are working. Now, 91% of smart meters are working absolutely fine, but clearly there are smart meters that aren't working. So we're putting in place robust expectations of suppliers that says there are things that consumers should expect you to do, and if you don't do it, there'll be automatic compensation for that consumer. And it's things like, you know, if there's an issue and you pick up the phone to your supplier, you should get a response within 5 days. If your meter isn't working, it should be sorted out and fixed within 90 days. If those things don't happen, consumers automatically compensated. And what we hope that does is it drives up standards. It means that consumers are really clear about what their rights are within this, but critically, it incentivizes the uptake of this. And why is this important? It's because we know in 2024, smart meters delivered £700 million of savings for bill users. And as we move towards more flexible energy system with time of use tariffs, what we want is that people have more control over when they use their energy, how they use their energy, and the savings that they can generate from doing that.
Okay. And those are measures in already, or those are measures you're advocating, penalties that you can serve to the suppliers? They're in position now, are they, Minister?
No, this is what we are consulting on at the moment, and this is what we want the regulator to put into place.
All right. Just a couple of other things while I have you on the line. The Prime Minister is said to have concerns over the idea voted through in the early hours of this morning for the Israeli Prime Minister to effectively seize control of Gaza and then have some kind of civil administration put in place to eradicate Hamas. As a Minister of the Government on the media round, how do you respond to that news overnight?
We think the decision is the wrong decision, and we are urging the Israeli government to reconsider that decision. And why are we saying that? Is because we think that this will be an escalation at a time that we have got an absolutely horrendous situation on the ground in Gaza. And if our objective is to get aid into Gaza, because there are people starving there at the moment, if it is to get the hostages out and to get a ceasefire, this does not help that. And so we are absolutely relentlessly focused on delivering those outcomes. And ultimately, and although it feels incredibly remote and incredibly hard to see how it's achieved, we have to keep plugging away and working towards getting a political solution that takes us towards a two-state solution.
And lastly, there seems to be a change of tack after the one-in, one-out deal, in that videos were released from Number 10 yesterday showing migrants in sweatshirts waiting to be processed at the Manston Centre in Kent. In the past, government agencies, government departments have not opted to do that. Why the change in tact, do you suppose?
Well, look, what is really important here is that a deal has been done with France. There is a scheme that we think will break the model of people smugglers, that will stop the horrendous situation of people having to travel on rubber dinghies across the channel. We've got to do everything that we can. We think this scheme is potentially a deal break, a game changer in that, and it's up and running.
Yes, but why the videos, Minister? Because you haven't done that in the past. It was done briefly in February, and then there were human rights concerns over these people being shown. Their faces are obscured, but it was still deemed to be rather hostile activity. Why the change of heart?
Well, look, I think the Home Office are trying to show the action that the government is taking. What I care about, and I think what a lot of your listeners will care about, is no one wants to see the situation where we've got small boats coming across the channel. It is not good for the people who are trying to come here to seek asylum. It is not good for us here. And we've got to break that and we've got to change that. And I think it's really important. The big takeaway is there is a scheme that is up and running, and a scheme that we believe will be an absolute game changer if we get that right. And that is the thing that we should be focusing on, because that's the thing that will break the impasse.
Grateful for your time explaining how listeners can get £2,500 over their off their electricity bill over a 10-year period. My thanks to Miatta Van Buller, who's Minister for Energy Consumers. 2 minutes before nine is the time. Let's talk about pylons. David's in Watford. David, you've called in while you were listening. The point you'd like to make. Good morning.
Hello, good morning. Hello. Thank you. Yes. Will people who already have pylons standing in and around 500 metres and also the wires passing over them be eligible for this? And
no.
Are they going to take that into consideration?
I'm afraid not, no. That's because
there'll
this
be a
is
lot of people who will be very, very unhappy and think it's very unfair. Thousands of people.
I know, but this is for new developments. So those already there, I'm afraid, it's not what they call retrospective. Is it something you would have supported, David?
What would have supported what?
Yeah. Do you have pylons near you, is what I'm asking?
I don't, no.
But oh, you don't?
I know of pylons in Watford, and some standing almost in people's gardens.
I'm afraid it's looking at new development. As you heard the Minister explain, they're determined to try and bank as much power as they can. David, thank you for making that point. Hopefully that's helped clarify it a little bit. Coming up after the news, your opportunity to put your calls to the Chief Constable of West Midlands Police, Craig Guildford, who is leading a successful crackdown on crime in certain areas. He'll be taking calls after this. 9 o'clock, LBC News with Thomas Watts is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, Keir Starmer has urged the Israeli government to think again before beginning a new offensive in Gaza. Benjamin Netanyahu's security cabinet has approved plans to occupy Gaza City, which could displace tens of thousands more people. It marks a step towards the Israeli leader's stated aim of taking full control of the territory to remove Hamas. The energy minister, Miatta Van Bullies, told Nick it is the wrong move.
We think that this will be an escalation at a time that we have got an absolutely horrendous situation on the ground in Gaza. And if our objective is to get aid into Gaza, because there are people starving there at the moment, if it is to get the hostages out and to get a ceasefire, this does not help that.
President Trump has confirmed a Russia-Ukraine summit is not a precondition to his talks with Vladimir Putin.
For you to meet with him, he doesn't have to agree to meet with Zelensky. Is that what you're saying?
No, he doesn't. No, no.
So when do you think that meeting
They would
happen?
Like to meet with me, and I'll do whatever I can to stop the killings.
The United Arab Emirates has been mooted as a possible location for a meeting between the US and Russian leaders. Moscow has suggested it could take place next week. The White House says the details are yet to be decided. The homelessness minister stepped down after being accused of hypocrisy over a rental property. Rushanara Ali reportedly hiked the rent on the house in East London by £700 a month, weeks after the previous tenant's contract ended. Ms. Ali's insisted she followed all legal requirements. More allegations against the Australian triple mushroom murderer can be reported for the first time. Erin Patterson was found guilty last month of murdering her former in-laws by feeding them a toxic beef Wellington in July 2023. It's emerged she was also accused of multiple attempts to kill her husband, but those charges were dropped. People who live near newly built electricity pylons could be given thousands of pounds off their bills. Ministers are proposing discounts of £250 a year for a decade. The plans are intended to overcome local opposition to energy infrastructure. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 10 at 91.10. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather. Most of the UK dry with sunny spells. Some rain in northern Scotland. A high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
This is Go.Compare FM reporting from Savvy Street, where mysterious moustaches are appearing on residents' faces. So, your tash, where did it come from?
I was sorting out my car insurance at Go.Compare and it appeared out of nowhere.
Madam, your moustache is magnificent.
I packed a great deal on home insurance and this Savvy Tash grew on me.
And resident cat, your whiskers have gone from meh to marvellous. How? Could have explained your pet insurance deal better myself. Britain, get in on the tash action. Be savvy. Feel the deal at Go.Compare.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after nine, Friday, August the 8th. And how often do we talk about crime? And how often do we share frustrations that we sometimes think they are not doing enough, they being the police? Well, we jumped at the opportunity to bring down the chief constable of the second largest police force in the whole of England and Wales, serving nearly 3 million people. I speak of the West Midlands Force, West Midlands Police, and also where they're actually having some impressive results as well. Earlier in the show, we played you the report by one of my LBC colleagues who went out with some of the officers who serve under the man from whom you're about to hear. Very successful operation cracking down on e-bikes. And how many times have we talked about the problems of those in cities such as London, Manchester, Leicester and other places? So they're doing something about it. Enough from me. Let's welcome then, arguably, the nation's second top cop, or certainly in the top half of the division, Chief Constable Craig Guildford, Chief Constable Westminster Police. Good to have you on, Chief Constable.
Good morning.
And good to meet you. I've heard a lot about you, so good to meet you at last. And it's all positive, by the way, I assure you. Something I often ask when I speak with senior officers, whether I've had the opportunity to speak with the Chief Constable GMP, Greater Manchester Police, a man I'm sure you know well, Sir Stephen Watson. I've spoken to quite regularly. I speak with commissioners. I go all the way back to Lord Stevens. That's how long I've been doing this. And I always ask, Chief Constable, what makes a good copper?
Probably three or four key things, really. Number one, decent moral compass, the ability to make the right judgment. Number two, not to be judgmental. We're not judge and jury. We gather the evidence. We produce it for the court. And I think number three, the ability to communicate on people's level and to remember that sometimes people are ringing the police and when we interact with them, it's the first time ever that they've had to do such a thing. And that's important that we get that right. Even if it's the 15th repetitive job that the cop's been to, it's the best service we can give. That's what it's all about. Public service and public service first.
Crime across the West Midlands dropped by around 6%. How have you, and more importantly, the men and women serving under you, how have they done it?
Well, it's easy to sit here, isn't it, as the chief and say, oh, it's absolutely fantastic and it's all about leadership. Leadership's part of it, but it's having good staff. Yes, setting a clear direction, but I try and keep things as simple as possible. So deliver a service that works for the public, get the phone answered in good time, be courteous, make a decision if you're going to go to a job or not, carry out a half-decent investigation when you've got there in good time, and then make sure you do what it says on the tin. We are the police. We are expected to keep people safe, to safeguard the vulnerable, to get people in the cells, and most importantly, to do what the public would expect us to do and to do the right thing in difficult circumstances.
Your officers kindly allowed one of my colleagues to go on an operation where you're tackling e-bikes, and that seems to have been very successful. A lot of bikes seized. Some of them, I read, modified to do speeds up to 60 miles an hour. They'll almost get you on the M1. I mean, that is truly petrifying if you're on a bicycle. But you've got problems with knife crime, Chief Constable.
That's
right.
The
worst in the country.
It was. It's certainly not now. It was worse when I started there, and it was an absolute top priority of mine and the police and crime commissioners, the mayors and everybody that lives there. And it's important to put that into context to say we've had some brilliant reductions. However, the job is not done and we've got to keep going at it and keep absolutely bearing down on it in
every
which way we
can. What did you do? What did you and your colleagues and your senior officers do?
Some of the key things are around prevention. So try and make sure you've got a good team of people. We call it Operation Guardian. We have those in the right places, the hot spots, responding to the intelligence, doing some targeted stop searching. The sort of the average hit rate is about 1 in 3 for a positive outcome from those things. Either we find some drugs, we find a knife, we find the person's wanted, etc. We make early arrests. Second thing, keep some resources wherever possible. Money is very tight. We're 700 cops fewer than we had in 2010, but we're doing some great outcomes. And then the key thing really is to be offender focused. So when the jobs happen, get behind the job quickly, get the people in custody that are doing most of these, produce a half-decent file, and make sure, wherever possible, you follow it through to a conclusion swiftly, wherever possible.
Lastly, before we go to the calls, Brian, you're the first caller. I have a number, 12,489 men and women serving under you. Is that broadly what you expect?
Yeah, that's
you could
right.
do with more, I imagine, a city the size of Birmingham.
Yeah, we've got about 8,150 cops. But as I said, we used to have many more.
Mm. All right, let's get to those calls. Brian, you're in Gloucester, and you're through to the Chief Constable. Go ahead, Brian. Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning, Chief Constable.
Morning.
Chief Constable, do you agree with the Home Secretary that police forces should be more transparent about the ethnicity of crime suspects?
We're always striving to be transparent in everything that we do, but we're governed by rules. Rules are often set by Parliament, they're set by the CPS, the courts. We have to be really careful that we do follow the rules and we don't just make rules up as we go along. So that particular debate at the moment, and I spoke to my colleague next door in Warwickshire, he's followed the rules, he's done the right thing. At the moment, the rules are under review. And they're under review by the CPS, the National Police Chiefs Council, and also there's a Law Commission review ongoing. And I think what we need to do is wait and see what comes out of there and then act accordingly and act properly. But in terms of the broadest theme of transparency, absolutely. We produce loads of data, and of course we want to give as much information as possible, but we have to operate within the bounds of the rules of the law.
Now, we're talking about this, and I don't need to remind you, Chief Constable, we have to tread carefully because there are active proceedings going before the court, but we're talking about this case that involved in Nuneaton. You would have taken the same action as your colleague in Warwickshire did?
Yes, that's right.
What is the problem with providing more information?
I think the problem with providing more information is you've got to be so careful with the protocol that we've got and the guidance that we've got, which comes actually from a few years ago, sort of post-Leveson, post-Jimmy Savile, post some of the issues around the Cliff Richard inquiry. And we need to make sure that we follow the rules. And if we don't want to come on the wrong side of the argument or prejudice any live proceedings. And that is really key. Can't underline that enough.
Let's get Brian. Quick response from you, Brian, then I'll move on to the next caller.
Well, this is about risk management, surely. I mean, insurance companies deal with protected characteristics every day, and they use them to assess what sort of fee you should pay, what your risk is. Surely the police should be doing that.
I don't see, how the ethnicity, my background or whatever, pertains into an insurance parallel. Sorry, Brian, just a quick sentence of what the point you're trying to make there.
There are all sorts of characteristics. They do, actually. Your age, your ethnicity.
Yes.
Insurance companies take all sorts of things into
account. I don't know quite that you can look at policing in the same way as insurance, Brian. Thank you for the point you made. They would say that a 45-year-old man was arrested from South East London, or a 65-year-old man, or whatever. We always get that. Just lastly, Brian, thank you. John, coming to you in a moment. Just lastly, if you go back to what were called the summer riots, Chief Constable, last year. Can I put to you that they were in some way fed, fueled by a lack of knowledge and the totally false belief that the person involved, who I won't name, but you know of whom I speak, was an asylum seeker, which was totally untrue, and that then fueled the anger. So the argument I would make to you is, if we had put out that this particular individual was British-born, we might not have had a quarter of the trouble that we had.
Well, it's easier to be the hindsight police than the real police. I'll put that one forward first. But I understand the point completely.
Would you be more comfortable in a world where there is... I'm not asking you on this one, but...
No, I'm prepared to answer.
In more transparency.
Really direct, which is, I think it's important that we have an avenue as police chiefs to be able to prevent the spread of disinformation? Because you mentioned the riots, and certainly from my perspective, we didn't have the signs of disorder on the scale that some other areas of the country had last year. But one of our local protagonists was actually somebody that was spreading disinformation about a particular local mosque being targeted by some extreme right-wing individuals. And that was proved to be false at the end of the day. And it's important that once we know that, we're able to put that quickly into the public domain, because that would prevent 300 or 400 people coming out onto the street.
Let's go to your home patch. John's in Birmingham. It's a big city. The gentleman opposite knows you far better than I. But, John, you're through to your Chief Constable, Craig Guildford. Go ahead.
Good morning, Nick. Great show. Thank you very much.
Hi,
Chief Constable, appreciate the statistics are saying things are down, but does this actually really reflect what the people think on the street? I work in Birmingham city centre, and I know that people are frightened and scared to still walk through our city centre.
Give me some areas, John. This is Nick speak for iSpeed. Where would you say to the Chief Constable you don't feel safe at night?
Round about the New Streets, Cornwall areas. Yeah, I mean, it's the local area around there, Nick. Okay. Those kind of areas, the vicinities. Cornwall Road, literally in the middle of the city centre. And I think it's having an adverse effect because people do not want to come into the city centre anymore. And you can see that from the number of shops that are shut, the number of restaurants, bars and everything. And it is people just don't feel safe in our city centre.
All right. I have to say here in London, sadly, we're losing some shops and bars, but let's come back to the Chief Constable.
Yeah, so, Nick, that's where I work as well and live relatively close by. I don't think everybody shares your view, but I do respect the view that you've given. We've got a load of operations
ongoing. Why would you say people don't share his view?
Because people I speak to across the partnership, people I speak to that are friends, family members, people that come and visit the city, loads of visitors visit Birmingham. They come to Birmingham. It's a vibrant place. It's a good place for a night out. It's certainly a decent place to get a meal. And, across all the cities in the country, we see shops shut in, and across our towns as well. That's not a symptom of a city that's unsafe. There are parts of the city that are more challenging than others. I've put more resources into the policing of the city. We've made a bid to government about some extra neighbourhood policing resources. We've got another 150 that are coming online. Quite pleased about that.
150 officers?
150 cops, yeah. And they'll be spread across neighbourhoods. And the most important thing is that we keep responding to local needs. So we're putting as many as we can into those areas, Nick, and it's important we keep doing so.
John, a quick response from you.
Yeah, can I just come back to the Chief Constable on that point about putting resources into local areas? In the area I actually live in, I was made aware by one of our local PCSOs that after 10 o'clock, the nearest response, if there was a burglary, a robbery, is some 8 miles away from where I live. Now, I live in the West Brom area of Birmingham, and it's just really appalling and really shocking to think that there's 8 to 10 miles away, the nearest police officer.
You've clearly been told wrong. So West Brom is a big response policing base, big CID base, big neighbourhood base. We get to calls within about 10 or 11 minutes on a 999 call on average across 3.1 million people. And to be really candid, burglaries down by about 20%, burglary dwelling, robberies down by about 19%. And we've doubled the number of people we've been arresting. In fact, to be honest, I've had to open another 3 custody suites. We had 4, we've now got 7. Last month, I think we did the most ever arrests we've ever done, about 5,500. Okay. So I'm afraid I don't concur with the information that you've been given.
John, if you want to leave your name and details with one of my colleagues, I'm sure the Chief Constable, as other forces have done in the past, will have someone who will get in touch and assure you if you have concerns. And if they are valid concerns, I don't know him yet, but in the past, every Chief Constable that's ever happened, they always do act on them. So, John, you maybe want to talk to one of my colleagues. Just lastly on the safety in the city, if I can.
Yeah.
If you had, and you might have, I've no idea, teenage sons or daughters, teenage nieces and nephews, would you be safe with them going out, spending a night in Brum?
Yeah, definitely, and they have done, and they're a bit older than that now. But absolutely, and when I go out, I see loads of young people.
Oh, I see, right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we are human, you know.
I mean, if you go out, but in civvies, if you didn't go out dressing
up. Yeah, absolutely. I was out last night in the city. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, enjoy. We have another John. John in Nuneaton. John, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning, Chief Constable. Following this protest event that's going to take place in Nuneaton tomorrow, what will be the effect, do you think, on local policing in this area?
So, Namitin, you're just across the border in sunny Warwickshire from where we are, and we're supplying some resources, as we did last year during the summer riots, to different forces around the country. So you'll be getting some West Mids cops to help supplement. There'll always be an impact on local resources because we don't have a standing army, and forces like Warwickshire certainly don't have a big public order department like the West Midlands do. So we help each other out, you know, we speak to each other regularly, and whenever there's a request for additional resources, we do our level best to make sure we provide that.
How concerned are you, John, tomorrow?
Well, the last time there was a big meeting of this sort was Britain First about 6 or 7 weeks ago. And to be honest, I think I went just to have a look what was going on. And the most aggressive groups were the opposition, not necessarily the people there protesting in the first place. So it's a bit of a flashpoint.
It is, and let's hope it goes off peacefully. Chief Constable, and be safe, John, on the subject, what is your view of some of these far-right organisations and other groups who turn up at protests where, in often cases, you have valid concerns from parents, grandparents, whatever it might be, the community, if I can use that word, and people who might live hundreds of miles away decide to rock up there? Chief Constable, they're troublemakers.
Well, I don't think they're troublemakers all the time, no. I think quite often it's easy to label individuals. From a cop's perspective and from the chief's perspective, I can just say that we are anti-crime, we're not anti-protest. We respect the right to protest peacefully. People come from all over the country to the big cities. They very often come to London, as what will be happening this weekend. Yes. We've got one or two in Birmingham, and as the caller just said, we're supplying some resources to Neaton just across the border. So, no, I don't buy into the fact that, it's any kind of sort of rent-a-mob approach. There's always one or two difficult individuals.
We're paid to deal with those. If I turn up wearing a balaclava, am I going to get asked to take it off?
Depends in what circumstances, and if you're sort of at the protest and one of my cops, or if I was on the front end and was asking a few questions and you were, you know, behaving in a way that was hostile and
was
going to be arresting you, then that will be coming off, obviously, because I'd need to confirm your identity, wouldn't I, to prosecute you.
But don't you think, do you think people should be able to wear balaclavas on demos, Chief Constable?
Quite often those types of questions are for lawmakers. So that would be a very political question that I would respectfully request that you replay back to somebody who makes the laws.
And your respectful request will be honoured. Let's go to another... Oh, we're going back to your patch. Dennis in Coventry. You're on the radio. Yes, morning, Dennis.
Morning. Morning, Nick. Morning, Chief Constable.
Morning, Dennis.
Morning. I've got a little issue. It's regarding... I volunteer in a charity shop in Coventry.
Well done.
Recently, we had a bit of a problem where during the night or during the day, a rock was thrown through our window.
Right.
That caused us quite concern because it's a charity shop. That means that basically...
I've got to move you to your question. If I could move you to your question, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
We reported it to my manager reported it to the police. We have the box in our possession. Nobody's actually come back to us regarding that particular.
Okay, so when did this happen?
This happened a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, and you've made a number of calls to the police as yet unanswered. Is that
what was... That's correct. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Right, same thing. I'd ask you to speak to one of my colleagues. Bear in mind, the Chief Constable, I very much doubt he's aware, and I'm not for a moment belittling what you and your colleagues have endured. You shouldn't have rocks thrown through shop windows, but I don't think the Chief Constable is aware of it. So, again, I sense this will be passed to one of his team. But let's put a general, a sort of overall response. Chief Constable?
So that really disappoints me in what you've described, particularly if you've tried a couple of times to get an update. As I said, we are very good at answering the telephone and being able to give you an update, and we should have been quite open with you at the time. We don't tend to get much forensic evidence off a rock.
No.
However, that should have been explained properly, respectfully, etc. Usually what happens with incidents like those, the local neighbourhood team or a PCSO will be doing a follow-up. Mm. They'll obviously have a look, and their eyes and their ears will be open. It may form part of a picture, in which case they'll be giving you a tinkle.
All right. And again, perhaps we can exchange. My colleague speaks to one
Absolutely.
Of your team and we can pick up with Dennis and assure him. Again in your patch, Michael's in Wolverhampton. Michael, you're through to your Chief Constable. Good morning.
Morning, gents. Calling from the pride of the West Midlands.
Absolutely.
Guys, yeah, just a quick one. I mean, I'm talking on behalf of tradesmen in the West Midlands. It's something that we all talk about when we're on jobs and stuff, but we're paranoid every time we go to sleep that our vans are going to get broken into or vans are going to get nicked, or when we're on jobs, we get our tools pinched. And basically, I mean, my van was broken into last year, and we just on a pub car park, and we just basically want some sort of clarity of what can be done in the future to not only prevent it, but if we call the police, what can they do to help us?
Chief Constable, what can the police do? I mean, let's come at this a different way. I will come back to you, but if I was running something and I had a number of chainsaws or power tools, isn't there some way that you can identify them so that if they are nicked, you can go to, I understand they're often sold at boot sales, you'll know far better than I, but there is some kind of marking system, isn't there, Chief Constable?
Yeah, there is, and I'm sure you'll know all about that, being a tradesman. I mean, the bottom line is, obviously, you take good, diligent steps yourself, deadlocks on the van, park the van in an area where there's some CCTV, if possible, don't have all the tools on the van, mark the tools, etc., because the second-hand market is one that we very often find things and we try and identify them, and we need some of those markings because obviously they're quite generic.
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes they'll write their name Dave.
Yeah, well, that,
so that, you've got a chainsaw with Dave written on it.
Yeah, exactly. So a little bit more intelligent than that, obviously. But the broad principle is something that will identify the tools if they are left in the vehicle. And I know from a worker perspective, you have to leave them in the vehicle sometimes. Broadly, across the West Mids, vehicle crime's down 15%. We've got three or four very big operations. We've arrested a lot of people for vehicle crime, in particularly theft from vehicles, but also the problem that we've had around car cannibalism. So these are relatively smaller cars where they'll have the bumper taken or, you know, the light cluster or the mirror or something like that.
Yeah.
We have really tried hard to clamp down on that. So broadly, there's resource behind it from an investigative perspective. There's quite a few people awaiting their time at court. So prevention-wise, whatever you can do yourself and whatever we can do from an investigation-wise, if you see anybody acting suspiciously, it's 999 all the time. We answer a 999 call, Nick. We have about 70,000 a month. We answer it now, on average, 2 seconds.
2 seconds?
2 seconds.
You only said that 2 seconds ago.
That's right, and we'd have answered one. So, and if you ring on the 101, we normally answer that within about 20, 25 seconds. So it's nothing like the HMRC helpline.
What's that running at? Do we know?
I couldn't possibly comment. I just read a report on the way down on the train.
It takes considerably longer, does it? Michael, good luck. Good luck, and I hope you manage to hold on to all your kit. You've talked, and understandably, you've lauded the work of your colleagues in areas such as crime, robbery and others, but shop theft or shoplifting, Chief Constable, I've got a note here, and this, you are not alone. This is, of course, a national epidemic or plague, but in your patch, a 24% lift?
Well, Nick, I think you might have got your maths wrong there.
Okay.
So to be, again, transparent and candid, it's up about 30% nationally.
30%?
And we're about the same, yeah.
Right.
And the reason for that, I think there are a number of factors. So at the moment, we've sort of doubled the number of people we've been arresting for shoplifting, and we've doubled the number of people we're charging and sending to court. And what we're trying to do very much is we still put some investment into a very intensive programme with the very recidivist end of shoplifting, the people that do 20, 30 of those offences a day. And we do that. It's a funded programme with probation, with retailers, with a charity. And we try and work intensively to stop that mass recidivism for the top sort of 10 offenders. Broadly, though, because we are very successful at answering the telephone, our abandonment rate is next to nothing. You get through quickly, and people have got more confidence in reporting it across the West Mids. We've got rid of that fallacy of if it's under £200, you don't report it. That's just nonsense.
Was that ever the case, Chief Constable?
In some places, perhaps an urban myth, I would say, across the country.
Not a force you've ever been in charge of, Nottinghamshire or West Mids.
No, I just don't sign up to that. You know, if there's a crime shoplifting, we need to get behind it. And quite often, these are small, single-person businesses, and the police need to be doing their bit to support them. It's not just about big businesses. So shoplifting is an indication of other crimes, obviously. We need to investigate, and we need to get a grip of it.
All right, let's get to some more calls. Tamara's in Shepherd's Bush, coming back to London. Tamara, you're through to Chief Constable of the West Mids. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Chief Constable.
Morning.
So, as you know, the crime in London is absolutely through the roof. I live in Shepherd's Bush, very close to Chiswick borders, and that so-called petty crime is causing massive impact to local shoppers because they're basically running now a closed-door policy, which probably affects their turnover and everything else. And I think a lot has to do with closing the police stations. What do you think, what lessons could much larger Metropolitan Police Force could learn from much smaller police force that is so successful?
Well, you're probably aware, Chief Constable, this comes a couple of days after the Metropolitan Police have said that they'll have to close 17 police counters, and one sort of counter other, total of 18 across the 30-plus boroughs. Is that something you'd ever do? And I know you don't, it's not quite as big a city, but would you ever sanction that?
I would if I had to, but they would be. That would be the one of the last choices. So to put it into context, I think it's important to sort of look at the evidence, which is police stations are very important for reassurance. The flag, the front desk, they're certainly not required 24/7, but some are. So, for instance, in the West Midlands, in the middle of Birmingham, the police station, the front desk is open 24/7. In other cities and towns across the West Mids, the front desk is still there. I've never closed one. In fact, I think we've opened another two. But they're not open 24/7. And I think what you've got to do is be a bit more creative in how you send some of the staff some work there when there aren't the footfall coming in. But these are difficult choices because of police funding. And, you know, I've seen the media coverage of the Met, and I think they are tough choices to make. And
well, how come you've opened two and they're shutting 17?
Because they've started off with a relatively large number, and perhaps it's an area whereby, you know, at the end of the day, there are some other linked opportunities. So you don't have to have your own police station,
a fire station, a council.
Yeah, they are. If I just answer, just to make it just a bit more obvious, where there's an opportunity to share a building and to reduce the costs and keep the cash in the public purse for the benefit of the public, so you keep your desk open, but you might share your desk with a couple of others or share a building, that's common sense. The police have not been great at that in the past.
Okay, so you would only close counters if it was a last option, effectively, what
yeah,
we're saying.
Absolutely, yeah. But remember, and this is a really important point, and I say this to the cops and to the people very often that I give talks to, is that it's the police is a people service. I'm more interested in the number of people that I employ to deliver the service than the number of bricks the Police and Crime Commissioner owns.
All right, coming to the last minute or so together, I was wondering if I could ask you if there's an update on the case involving Dolars Alexanders, if I'm saying that correctly. This is after a 12-year-old boy died after being hit by a black BMW car in Coventry of last year. He was wanted on suspicion of causing death by dangerous driving. He's believed to have been in Latvia, and his parents have met with the Latvian ambassador. Chief Constable, is there an advance on that story?
I can't say too much about that because it's a live case, other than there's some dedicated resource that carried out a very good investigation and supported that family. We've also been in consultation with the CPS, who have done a good job in liaising with their counterparts. Government have played a role in this, and I think we're just at the stage of awaiting a further update, and I'm very much hoping to see justice done in that tragic case. That's probably all I can say, Nick.
So I'll just say the one word, extradition. And you're going to stay quiet and just stare at me, I imagine.
That's probably right.
Okay, well, I tried. Lorne Castle, the police officer down in Bournemouth who lost his job after arresting a 15-year-old boy. He sat on him and used some particularly disobliging language. He probably went over the top and he used the F word. He lost his job. Was that the right call?
I haven't listened to the circumstances of the case, but being the lead on professional standards, I do have a view on it, and I'm glad you've asked me the question. So the one thing to bear in mind is that none of the cops are above the law, and none of the cops are below the law. They are entitled to a fair hearing. And whoever hears that case, and it's usually either a chief on their own, or I think in his case it was a three-person panel, so one chief and probably two independent members of the public that were appointed by the Police and Crime Commissioner to hear the evidence. They'll weigh the evidence and they'll listen to any aggravating factors, mitigating factors, any harm that they think has been caused. And then we have to trust them to look at the guidance and to make a reasonable decision within the bounds of reasonableness. And as long as those decisions are within the bounds of reasonableness, then I don't think we can have a criticism. But I, sitting here, have not seen every detail of the case.
But you lead in this area for police chiefs.
I do, absolutely. and the
cops. Have you called it in, then, this particular case, or whatever the expression is?
No, there's no mandation to call it in, because the rules are there for everybody to apply, and it's important to just underline that no police officer is above the law, but no police officer either is below the law. So if that panel have made that decision, the officer can appeal. I don't know if there's a live appeal going on at the moment to a police arbitration tribunal.
My understanding, he's still considering that decision.
And so, consequently, I would say that it's probably best if I don't say too much more about that specific case, but I will be able to say broadly, you take the evidence into account. Obviously, people make mistakes. Sometimes, officers, you know, on occasion, may use force which is deemed to be excessive. You have to think about the situation, the position the officer's in, the level of harm, the reputation to the police service, and really the panel's job is to uphold high standards. But that doesn't mean that every police officer that gets found of gross misconduct is sacked.
All right. Finally, you've referenced London on a couple of occasions. There is supposedly a major day of demonstration with protesters reportedly going deliberately to seek arrest, mass arrest policy. How has public order policing changed? I don't expect you to comment on London, because you wouldn't expect Sir Mark Rowley to comment on Westminster. But how has public order policing changed?
Well, he might, because he used to be a cop there. and he would expect me to, and especially with having some experience of being a public order commander. But the way it's changed is policing changes as society changes, Nick. And very much movements come and movements go, and political instances change over time. But from our perspective, there's quite often a period of time whereby the courts and the police and government, the Home Office, take time to adjust to different movements. And decisions are made, and then obviously those decisions are implemented by the police service and they are tested by the courts. That's the system we live in the UK. So some of the key things that have changed are obviously sort of mass protest, selective protest.
It's more tricky, isn't it?
With one of these, by the way, I'm holding up
my mobile phone. With one of these, everyone is now a citizen journalist.
That's absolutely citizen right. Journalist. But also, you know, did I think when I joined the cops 30 years ago that people would be super gluing themselves to tarmac and stuff like that, or, you know, putting pink spray on one of our, you know, jets, one of our transport aircraft? No, I didn't. But, you know, we're in the public sector, we're in the public service, we have to respond to that, to work with it, to keep ahead of the game, to engage with some of these protest groups, but also to change our tactics accordingly and to make sure that we try and stay a step ahead, that we try and anticipate, get good intelligence and try and focus our resource around the most extreme of the threats.
Been a pleasure meeting you. Can I send my best wishes to the men and women who serve under you in the great area of West Midlands?
You certainly can. They're doing a good job.
Chief Constable Craig Guildford, thanks for appearing on LBC, where the 9:30 news is next.
Sir Keir Starmer has urged the Israeli government to reconsider plans to take control of Gaza City. The move was approved by Benjamin Netanyahu's security cabinet overnight. Donald Trump says he is prepared to meet Vladimir Putin, even if the Russian leader refuses to speak to Volodymyr Zelensky. Moscow suggested the UAE as a possible location for the talks as soon as next week. People living near new pylons could get £250 a year off their energy bills for a decade. The government's hoping the cash benefit will reduce local opposition to new electricity infrastructure. LBC weather, most of the UK dry with sunny spells, some rain in northern Scotland, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CMC. You can claim direct to your lender and the Financial Ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Yep, I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. So turn up that dial.
The EuroMillions jackpot is £172 million. Go on. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's, as we often do when we have high-profile interviews, and just to remind you, the West Midlands, effectively is the second largest force in the whole of the country, and that's the first time we've had an opportunity for you to put your calls to its Chief Constable, Craig Guildford. And listening, and now with a report on what we might have learned, LBC's Helen Hodnott is in the studio with me. Helen, good morning. What have we learned?
Morning, Nick. So, yes, on the transparency of police forces and whether or not information about the ethnicity and immigration status of suspects should be released, the Chief Constable said they're always striving to be transparent, but he said that they are governed by rules which they have to follow to be careful. You asked about whether the Warwickshire Chief Constable has done the right thing in this case. He said that he's followed the rules, he's done a good job. You pressed him about the Warwickshire Police Constable's status, and he said he would have done the exact same thing. He said that we have to be careful in the post-Leveson, post-Jimmy Savile era, that we don't go on the wrong side of the argument and prejudice any live proceedings. You asked, Nick, if you went back to last summer's riots, does he agree that they were fed or fueled by a lack of knowledge of the information have been put out about a certain suspect being British born? Then does he agree that there might have only been a quarter of the unrest that we saw? The Chief Constable said we're not the hindsight police. He said it's important that when we have an avenue, that we have an avenue as police chiefs to prevent the spread of misinformation, and they want to be able to put as much information into the public domain as possible.
Okay, Helen, one other area we covered was the Chief Constable for an update on the case of 12-year-old Keaton Slater. Now, he died after being hit by a black BMW in Coventry of June last year. Police believe Dolores Alexanders, who's wanted on suspicion of causing death by dangerous driving, is in Latvia, and indeed the lad's parents have met with the Latvian ambassador. Now, obviously, the Chief Constable is rather precluded from giving too much information, but I do sense there might be a breakthrough. I remind you of what he said.
I can't say too much about that because it's a live case, other than there's some dedicated resource that carried out a very good investigation and supported that family. We've also been in consultation with the CPS, who have done a good job in liaising with their counterparts. Government have played a role in this, and I think we're just at the stage of awaiting a further update, and I'm very much hoping to see justice done in that tragic case. That's probably all I can say, Nick.
So I'll just say the one word, extradition. And you're going to stay quiet and just stare at me, I imagine.
That's probably right.
Okay, well, I tried. Let's pick up on what you're saying as reaction to that interview or the calls that he took. Lynn in Devon, he sounds competent, unlike Chief Constable as most other forces. John says, I was impressed this morning. His guest, the Chief Constable, he was clear. He didn't hide. Every question answered, including awkward ones. I wish MPs could answer the same. I have to say, Simon says, what a refreshing session. Here we go. This is, where's your name? I don't know who our police constable is for London Bromley area, but this constable sounds, well, he's a chief constable. Can we swap him for ours? He sounds on point, knows his statistics, and is making a difference. Well, he is making a difference. I mean, the one area where I knew I could get him is shoplifting, and he didn't dance around it. In fact, it's even worse than the figures that we had. Let's go to someone who lives in his patch. Chris is in Coventry. Chris, that was your chief constable you just spent time talking with. What did you take from it? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I was quite impressed with the Chief Constable, actually, in the way that he knew his figures off the top of his head, and he didn't appear to me like a politician, which most people in senior positions like that sometimes do. Although I wish I could have got my question to him about car crime in Coventry more so than anything.
Okay, what's happening with car? I will have stats here. I think they're going to say it's come down. I'm going to find it while you're talking. What do you want to say about car crime?
Well, I appreciate that the chief managed to sort of show that most crime was on the way down, but on the ground it doesn't feel like that sometimes. Quite a lot of friends and family
down,
have had
supposedly
cars
down
stolen.
6%. Sorry to talk over you. I just wanted to give you that. Okay. On you go. Yeah, go on.
I was just going to say, you know, in terms of car theft, so many friends and family having cars stolen, and they just seem to go into a black hole and they don't seem to get them back. But you know, actually, albeit that was my original call, really, I was really impressed with how he was. So yeah,
what car did you have nicked?
Not mine personally, but a friend of mine had their Cougar nicked.
Right,
you know, after 2 weeks of having it. I think the car company's got a lot to say about that as well as the police, but I was overall, I was impressed with the chief constable.
Well, so 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago, I had my car stolen. No idea. It almost certainly was shipped out, probably on its way to Africa, because that's where Jeeps are going. And you're absolutely right what you say about manufacturers, because I was fortunate enough to have a conversation with someone fairly senior in the force in my area. And, you know, the police forces up and down the land have begged car manufacturers. I never asked for keyless entry, but they've said once you've got keyless entry, the guy can then start the car. There needs to be another block. There needs to be another key you put in, or a code or something like that. And the manufacturers just say they're not interested because of the cost implications.
Yeah. And Nick, if I could just say one more thing. It's nice, obviously, as a commentary lad, it's nice to see, I'm a long-time listener of LBC, it's nice to see West Midlands and Coventry represented. And I always think that's good as well as having the commissioner on. But it's also good to see other regions represented as well.
No, it's great. We were great to are you a Coventry fan?
Indeed, yeah.
Frank Lampard, the season kicks off tonight, tomorrow, fairly
soon. I was unsure about Frank coming on board, but I think I'm going to eat my words and hopefully it's going to be a great season.
OK, can we do a deal? Leicester City and Coventry City, we both go up at the end of this season. What do you say?
I'll meet you on the M69, Nick.
Safe driving, don't let your car get nicked. Chris, thank you. Let's come back to other matters, because although it's great and we enjoyed having the Chief Constable of Greater Manchester on, we'll move to more national matters, or almost international matters, with the situation in which we find ourselves with this one in, one out. Now, there's been a radical change in tack. You may recall, if you listen to me for some time, is that I've asked the Home Secretary, I've asked the Immigration Minister, I've not asked the Prime Minister because I've not had the opportunity. Why are we not putting out videos? We keep being told that 30,000 people have been deported. Why do we not put videos out? Obviously, their face is obscured. I don't expect to see any of that. Why aren't we doing that? And I was told that they hadn't really thought about it. And then I was told, well, in February, it caused human rights outrages, even though you can't see their faces. Well, if we go to somewhere where it's quite successful, it doesn't seem to have stopped the US, where they've actually set it to the ad. Now, bear in mind, it's not the advert that's playing. The images you're seeing are of people with their hands in those cuffs that they do, those slide plastic cuffs, being led onto aircraft or being effectively arrested by their department, ICE.
Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. And right now, you can save £50 per person. That's £200 off for a family of four.
But it's not a family of four. It's people being led away, often in orange overalls, with their hands tied, with their heads down, looking about by fairly hefty, burly-looking ICE officers as they're deported. You look at the situation in the United States, it has worked. You can check out that advert, by the way, on the LBC app or on lbc.co.uk. Just go to the LBC app. Now, that's been bouncing around for a few weeks. I've been suggesting we should have video for a few months. Guess what number 10 put out last night on X? Episode of Crime Watch with Nick Ross. It does rather sound like that, but it's the same sort of thing. Again, with their faces blurred out, and again with border force or police officers with their faces blurred out as well. In one instance, the migrants are in grey sweats. It's very, very US. Are in grey, I was going to say sweatshirts, but actually effectively grey tracksuits, and they're sitting at the Home Office Processing Centre in Manston in Kent, and then some are led away and would appear to be taken back on boats. So, again, that's on the LBC app. Is that the approach that will work, or is the reality, when Sir Keir Starmer said yesterday that anyone coming to this country will face going back to France, you know he's talking absolute nonsense, because it's one in, one out, a maximum of 50. So that's, if you allow for the numbers, that's about one in 18, according to figures by the Times. But do those videos work? We'll come to that conversation in a moment. And we might also round up the conversation that we've been having as well about a couple of other matters, not least the validity of Kemi Badenoch's assertions, as we've been speaking to people involved in schooling in Nigeria, and the delights of having an electricity pylon. It's a way of saving £2,500, £250 a year over 10 years. As the caller John said, unfortunately, if you've already got one at the bottom of your garden, it's not going to help you, but it might help with new developments. We might pick up on that as well. It's 9:45, LBC News Headlines, Thomas Watts.
Sir Keir Starmer has urged the Israeli government to think again before beginning a new offensive in Gaza. The UAE has been mooted as a possible location for a meeting between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. A four-year-old boy has died after he was hit by a bus outside a hospital in Margate. LBC weather. Most of the UK dry with sunny spells. A high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, these major problems continue for all services via Stevenage. The line is blocked because of an ongoing investigation, so all services via Stevenage remain suspended. Also, Thameslink can't run between South Croydon and East Grinstead and between London Bridge and Dartford. And also, Thameslink and East Midlands Railway are severely disrupted going via Radlett. On London Overground, the Windrush line remains suspended between Crystal Palace and Sydenham, and that's all down to a six. Signal failure. On the roads, busy on the M1 southbound, junction 11A at Dunstable. It's all down to an accident. And the A12 remains closed at northbound from junction 19 at the Boreham Interchange to junction 20A.
This is LBC.
Train to Worthing for scuba training. Yep, we're that family now.
Josh, flip us off until you're in the water, mate.
Well, I look ridiculous, but they're loving it.
Maddie, goggles the other way around, sweetie.
Ah, seats found, kids happy. Heading home. Definitely bringing these wetsuits to our next beach day.
Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Hi, I'm Dr. Paul Abrahams, Principal Cosmetic Dentist at Smarmore Dental Care St. John's Wood. I refer my implant patients to Darwin and Tanner and consider them to be an extension of my fabulous team. I trust the team at Darwin and Tanner to help me give my patients the smile they've always wanted.
A team of dental experts second to none, armed with the very latest in dental implant knowledge, technology and techniques. Visit darwinandtanner.co.uk.
Save this summer with Lidl Plus. Get 2 for £7 on burgers, jumbo sausages and more. And get 2 for £3.50 on our plant burgers, veggie sausages and more veggie classics. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this summer today.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Pump 6 in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Are you ready to win big? Enter now at winplus.co.uk to win huge cash prizes and loads more. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. Rest every 2 hours to inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, let's pick up on the conversation that we're having concerning these videos that you can see on the LBC app and the fact that, well, really within 24 hours, the idea of this one in, one out was seeming to unravel. Barry says one in, one out. It is the, well, we talked about this yesterday, actually. It is the hokey-cokey. It will never work. Macron is taking the mick. Matt says, I understand the requirement to control channel boat crossings, which is only 4% of migration, but I can't believe we're now living in a society where we have to sate the now overt racists by posting videos of deportations. I'm happy I'll be on the right side of history. Maddie, I suppose it depends on whether you want results or not, because it, well, and also whether you see it as an issue. Clearly this government does. I would suggest probably most political parties do. And it would be that many agencies do as well. And if you look to what has been achieved in the United States, and it doesn't come easily and it gets a lot of opposition, they have now brought the numbers down. It is pretty brutal, and if you can get to the LBC app, you'll see that in a way they seem to celebrate the misery of people that are being deported by making jokey adverts out of it. I would never, ever condone that. But taking a tough line with illegality, yes, I think that probably is the idea, because it's the only way a country can run is if you've got a rough idea how many people you've got to run it with or for. And that's the reality. Now, someone else who'd like to be running the country is Kemi Badenoch. In the previous hour, we got into this aspect of the conversation. Around this time yesterday, we were talking about how she was talking about her faith, how she was a Christian, but she couldn't believe in God any longer because of the ghastly events of Joseph Fritzl, who, of course, kidnapped and raped his daughter for a number of years, had seven children with her. She was hidden in a cellar in Austria. I guess it's enough to shake anyone's faith. But then, during the interview, which finally broadcast last night, she expanded, and having talked about religion, she moved into the field of education.
Person, I was the tattletale in the class, like telling you, getting people into trouble. Because I hated cheating, because there I was, you know, I wanted to be first in the class, and I've done all the work, and then there's some people who are copying notes and saying, why should they get away with it? And so I'd raise up my hand. I remember there was this extraordinary day, I must have been about 14 or 15, and I said, he's cheating. I stood up in the middle of the exam, and I stood up and said, he's cheating, he's the one that's doing it. And that boy ended up getting expelled. And I didn't get praised for it. And I was a relatively popular kid at school. And people said, why did you do that? Why would you do that? And I said, because he was doing the wrong thing. And someone said, you don't belong here. That you don't know how to behave. You don't belong here. And I've heard that all my life.
Well, we've also explored the fact that one of the schools she went to was an all-girls college, although it does appear she moved school, so we're not quite sure when. But the reality, or would this actually make her more attractive to vote for? Wilson's in Basildon. Would you be more likely to vote for a politician like this? Good morning.
I don't really vote.
Oh, right, okay. Why not, sir?
Because the two parties, all the parties we have in UK now, they are just saying rubbish or doing rubbish. Because
right.
They will promise her one thing, and when they get there...
Well, there are other parties, of course, sir. There's the Lib Dems, there's the Greens, there's Reform UK, there's all sorts, assuming the ones you mentioned are Conservative and Labour. There are the other ones.
They are yet to convince me, really.
Okay.
Yeah. What I'm saying is I can relate with Kemi. I had my secondary school and primary school in Nigeria, and during our time is a very competitive period.
Mm-hmm.
You always want to be on top of the class, so when you see people cheating, you point it out. And that is common in Nigeria then. I don't know if now. It's very common.
Did you do it? Did you call people out?
Definitely I do.
Oh, you did?
Definitely. Yes, I did. And you don't see anything wrong with it in Nigeria. But the problem is the discipline, like maybe I expect somebody or the other, depends on the school. It varies from school to school. There are some schools, like one of your callers, Ella, said, when I ask you to repeat the class, some they fail you in that course, and like my time, you need to pass a certain number of courses to move to the other, to the higher class.
Wilson, did you ever cheat?
Never. I'm one of the top.
You're telling me every exam you ever went into in your entire school career, I mean yearly exams, not all state exams, never ever cheated, even in an end of year exam.
I have never ever cheated. Like my dad would tell me, if you fail and you put in all your efforts, I will appreciate it.
All right.
Now you passing and cheating.
All right. Okay. Well, credit to you. I could say the same. Tricia in Antwerp. Good for Kemi. Everything she said on that interview, I admire her convictions. More politicians need to be like her. Isn't it funny she's got that first name term first name recognition that all politicians dream of, just known as Boris or, in this case, Kemi. Wow. Jeff in Wiltshire. We complain daily that kids are feral, crime is rampant, no one challenges the miscreants. Then Kemi, there we go again, says she saw wrongdoing, challenged it. And this makes her the devil. Referring to people as snitches and grasses, etc., if they report things to authorities, makes no sense. I don't know, really, that someone cheating on an end-of-year exam is quite the same as running around taking drugs, smashing cars, or whatever it might be. To me, they're on a very different level. Gary's in Harrow. Gary, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yeah, hi,
hello.
Nick.
Hello, I'm Nick, yes.
You mentioned about one of your colleagues getting run over by this e-scooter. If you knew who it was and it was a child, would you not report them to the authorities.
Yes, because that's a crime that can send you to court, send you to jail.
Wrongdoing. So effectively, it's wrongdoing. So it sounds like you've got very flexible morals when it comes to wrongdoing.
You bet.
So reporting someone that's cheating.
Yeah.
Doesn't.
I'm not going to dob a kid in. I'm not going to dob a colleague in. Sorry, a fellow pupil in for cheating. No, I'm not. But I see someone risk someone's life by clattering into them on an e-bike. Yes, of course. It's called proportion, Gary.
Well, okay, well, you can be flexible with your morals and
yes, I am. Yeah. Are you not flexible with your morals?
Well, morals are wrong. Things are right when things are wrong.
So you are 100% all the time?
Yeah, why not? Like, if you're... This is the funny thing. How do you then decide? So let's say a kid didn't end up hurting your colleague, but whizzed past and just scared them. Would you then report the child? So, do you see what I mean? What you're trying to filter through and justify. So if someone gets hurt, then I'll report them. If someone whizzes past...
Well, that's a criminal act, isn't it? That's a criminal act, obviously. Obviously, I'm going to report a criminal act.
So if there's only a number of A grades available...
Pardon
me? If that person that's cheated ends up denying someone that didn't cheat, if they end up taking the A grade and someone ends up getting a B grade because they didn't cheat, are you saying that's okay?
Gary, you don't have a set number of A grades.
It's proportional, of course it is.
No,
there's a proportion.
It's not going to affect your studies. If you've done all your revision, you'll answer the questions, you'll be in a great place. How's it going to affect you?
So you're saying that if everyone in the country were able to do their studies, everyone can get an A grade. It's not possible. It's proportional representation. So there's only a certain number of A grades available.
Your niece
cheated, why should they benefit above someone that hasn't cheated?
You've asked me a question. I'm going to put one to you. Your niece or nephew comes to stay with you. You ask them... Sorry, they ask you to hand them their coat, and there are some drugs in there, whatever it might be. Are you going to dob your nephew in?
I will talk to them in the first instance.
Ah, so you wouldn't. Ah, you see. So your morals are flexible, Gary.
No, well, they're not. They're not, because I'm...
Ah, so you are going to instantly call the police?
Well, I said I'm going to find out whose drugs they are.
Well, they've just fallen out of his pocket.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean they're theirs.
Okay, they're mine, Uncle Gary.
Okay, well, then in that case, I will obviously have a conversation and say, look, where have you got these from? Why have you got them? Do you understand what you're doing?
I would be exactly the same. You're the same as I am. You're not going to dob a lad in for that. You're going to talk to the boy and tell him not to be such an absolute raving idiot. I'm going to talk to your father or your mother, whoever the relative is. That's what you're going to do. And let's be honest, The idea of a state exam in geography or whatever it was, it's not the same as a woman almost being hit by an e-bike. Come on, we could
agreed.
All see that.
Agreed. Okay, agreed. But also, the idea of wrongdoing is wrong. So if someone is cheating, like as per your last text that you read out, we're complaining about feral children running around, lawless and sort of no one challenges them. But on the flip side, when we're trying to raise the standards of society, that gets called out as being sort of wrong as well. Remember, Kemi Badenoch, I'll use both her names.
She's done well.
Not in herself expel the child. She just pointed out the wrongdoing. She couldn't necessarily have known that the child would be expelled. That's the authorities.
But would you laud it? Would you hail that as one of the great moments of your secondary education?
No, I wouldn't. I don't like her. I don't think that she's up to much. But when we get these moments of clarity, they should be lauded, not disrespected. Because otherwise, we're going to get the society that we've got now, which is a little bit lawless, that is a little bit feral, that is a little bit disrespectful to older people, and that can't be the right way around, is it? Surely you're not. Surely we need higher standards.
Final question.
If we start from the position of we want higher standards, how do we get those higher standards?
Can I ask you a final question? Do you think people are more likely or less likely to vote for Kemi Badenoch as a result of this?
In a general sense, less likely, but not just because of this. I think that the Tories have... I think it's a very long road back from where they've been.
I think everyone would agree with that, probably them as well. Gary, thanks for all your input. I'm done for another week. James O'Brien's waiting the other side of the news here on LBC. I'll be back with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock and the scenes are too bloody, the death toll far too high to indulge in any games of prediction tennis. But I don't think anybody quite saw this coming, did they? The notion that Israel would occupy the entire Gaza Strip, almost 2 years since the October 7th atrocity, and splitting not only his own country, in the case of Benjamin Netanyahu, but also his own cabinet. And I wonder who is qualified to speculate on what this will mean. We know what Netanyahu is saying. We also know that it may not transpire as he says it will. But rise above it and tell me what will happen.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer has condemned plans by the Israeli government to escalate its offensive in Gaza. He's warned the move to occupy Gaza City will only bring more bloodshed and won't help to secure the release of Israeli hostages. It was approved by Benjamin Netanyahu's security cabinet overnight. Blake Sifton, who is following developments, says a date for the operation hasn't been made public.
It's unclear if this is a reduced version of that plan that he announced yesterday to take all of Gaza, or whether this is only the first phase. Now, Gaza City is, of course, the largest city in Gaza. It's home to some 800,000 Palestinians, and they would need to be evacuated, and they would be pushed south.
The Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, will discuss Gaza and Ukraine with J.D. Vance later. Mr. Lammy is due to host the U.S. Vice President at Chevening, his official country house in Kent, during Mr. Vance's holiday in Britain. Their talks follow reports Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin could meet within days. A four-year-old boy has died after he was hit by a bus outside a hospital in Kent. It happened outside the Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother Hospital in Margate yesterday afternoon. A chief constable has backed the decision by Warwickshire Police not to publish details of two rape suspects' backgrounds. It follows allegations of a cover-up by the reform leader of Warwickshire County Council. The men had been charged with the rape of a 12-year-old girl in Nuneaton. Craig Guildford, who leads neighbouring West Midlands Police, has told LBC he'd have done the same.
We're always striving to be transparent in everything that we do, but we're governed by rules. Rules are often set by Parliament, they're set by the CPS, the courts. We have to be really careful that we do follow the rules and we don't just make rules up as we go along. So that particular debate at the moment, and I spoke to my colleague next door in Warwickshire, he's followed the rules, he's done the right thing. At the moment, the rules are under review.
The independent MP, Rupert Lowe, has admitted mistaking a charity rowing crew for small boat migrants. Mr. Lowe, formerly of Reform UK, posted a picture on social media with the caption, "Dinghies coming into Great Yarmouth right now." He's since made a donation to the rowers' charity, but says he won't apologise for being vigilant. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 10 at 91.10. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, most of the country will be dry with sunny spells today. Some rain in northern Scotland, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's hard to know which headline to start with. If we start at home, then it would be with Keir Starmer's fairly impassioned call upon the Israeli government not to further escalate its offensive in Gaza. If we were to begin in Israel, it would probably be the headline that states Israeli military chief warns against widening war. And if we were to step back from national politics and look at the world as a whole, then it would be the United Nations echoing both of those calls, the calls from the Israeli military chief and indeed from the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. But if we've learned anything over the course of the last 2 years, we have learned that Benjamin Netanyahu will not heed any warnings or indeed threats, particularly as long as he has the full-throated support of the President of the United States of America, which somewhat improbably is still Donald Trump. And so the decision yesterday to announce a full occupation of Gaza, a new military push in a part of the world that is already more or less razed to the ground. Some of the footage coming in from the planes that have been dropping aid. I lack the vocabulary sometimes to describe things, because if I say it looks like something out of a film or it looks like something out of a science fiction entertainment, it dilutes the gravity of the situation. It dilutes the horror. It's not a film. It's not dystopia. It's not science fiction. It's real. And it is happening. I felt a bit like that on October the 8th, 2 years ago, when you just tried to find the words to describe the hideousness of what you witnessed that day. But goodness me, if we manage to find those words, I'm not sure we can find the right words to describe what has already happened. And so the announcement against both domestic and international opposition, I'm not sure anybody is supportive of this plan except the United States of America, that they are going to take over Gaza City, that there is to be a de facto full occupation of the entire region, and then, and this is the bit that perhaps stretches credulity, and then there'll be a withdrawal so that the region is replaced or the region is subsequently governed by Arabs, by Palestinian people. The British ambassador to Israel, Simon Walter, said that this would be a huge mistake. He's also pushed back against the obviously ludicrous claim that recognition of Palestinian statehood by the UK would somehow be a reward for Hamas. Mick Huckabee, whose support for Israel is absolutely undilutable, has said the Israeli government should be free to do whatever they want. It's not our job to tell them what they should or should not do, which makes you wonder what the job of a US envoy is. And noted that moment. What is your job then, Mick, if it's not to put pressure on foreign governments to do what you consider to be right? I suppose if you do consider it to be right but don't want to say so, then suggesting that... What's the job of a US envoy if it isn't to exert influence? It's sort of poo-pooing the existence of diplomacy, really, in a way. And see, the other piece of the jigsaw, if you like, is reported in... by the BBC today in a interesting piece that states many here believe that Netanyahu is prolonging the conflict to guarantee the survival of his coalition. And this brings us back to Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich, upon whom Netanyahu relies for his retention of power. And the idea that he's now going to attack the entire Gaza Strip, or occupy the entire Gaza Strip, simply to cling on to power, simply to appease the ultra-nationalist or far-right ministers in his own government. Even 2 years into this nightmare, that just seems to me to be too crass to be true, doesn't it? I don't know what the alternative is. The alternative is that he really has been committed to the notion of a greater Israel all along, that the reports of dreams of settling the Gaza Strip illegally, as much of the West Bank has been illegally settled, have been full and full frontal in Benjamin Netanyahu's thinking since the very beginning. The idea of securing the release of the hostages by doing a, quotes, deal, end quotes, with Hamas still gets cited by some people as a plausible alternative, but they tried that, and it was Netanyahu's decision to call time upon that process, which is why so many of the protests back in Israel are against his policies regarding and attitudes to the hostages that are still there, one of whom, of course, was photographed, or a photograph was released of him earlier this week that was almost impossible to contemplate, such was the state of his emaciation. So we will inevitably get into the rights and wrongs of it, and I guess that it is possible that there will be people who are fully supportive of what Netanyahu intends to do. But if I'd asked them 2 years ago, if I'd asked them 18 months ago whether or not they would be in favour.